The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Whenever you talk to a rapper or any dude who has like a name, like Kid Cudi, you never know. Am I supposed to call you Kid? Like Immortal Technique comes on the podcast all the time. To this day, I don't know what to call him. I love that dude. I love it. He's cool as fuck. I love talking to him, but I never know what to call him. Do I call him Tech? Do I call him Immortal? Mr. Technique? So I had to ask you before this podcast started. I said, do I refer to you as Kid Cudi or do I call you Scott?
I introduce myself to other human beings with my government name, Scott. I don't walk up and say, hey, I'm Kid Cudi. But no, like I get Mr. Cudi sometime, and that's a little weird. It makes me sound like a stripper or something. It's weird, yeah.
Mr. Cudi.
Yeah, Mr. Cudi. Mr. Cudi is cool if it's like a chick or something. You know, yeah.
Yeah, that's it's a weird, there's not a whole lot of white dudes who ever pulled off the nickname. Like Carrot Top. Weird Al, right? Weird Al's always Weird Al. It's always Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
No, hi, I'm Al Yankovic. It's Weird Al, right? Yeah.
P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Prince, whatever.
A lot of black guys pulled it off. Yeah. I mean, you just keep going forever. But like, there's a small handful of white people that have ever pulled off the nickname.
Captain Antonio.
I thought you were going to talk about Captain Kirk.
I was Captain Antonio.
The Captain Antonio. The kid goes deep into the 1970s drawer. The Captain Antonio. Wow. That's a terrible band from back way back in the day. Terrible by today's standards. You know, but back in the day, people loved them. Do you remember the Captain Antonio?
No.
I don't remember what they sang. I shouldn't even say they're terrible, because I'm being just a dick. Because I don't remember any of their songs.
They're probably sitting there like, hey! What's the big idea?
I believe one of them is dead.
Captain.
I think one of them got like some serious anorexia. Though I think the woman got serious. I might be mixing my stories up. From 1970s bands that I barely pay attention to, but you want to talk about some people that have got some fucking stories, you know, the people that grew up during the 60s and were like famous during the 70s.
Yeah,
that's a strange little slice of American life right there.
Oh yeah, you can imagine. It was just a whole another way of living, you know. I think there was a lot more communication amongst human beings.
Yeah,
you
for
know
sure.
I mean? Like just casual conversation. It wasn't like weird. Nowadays, if you even just say hi to someone walking down the street, it's like, what the fuck? It's
yeah,
like,
right?
You being polite, like, what the fuck did you say to me?
Well, I think two things are going on. One, people are just nervous because there's a lot of news stories about terrible things that happen all over the world. Like, most of what you get in the news is terrible things.
Yeah.
So people are always worried about terrible things when they meet strangers. And then two, everybody's fucking texting and emailing, and the amount of time you spend person to person has probably been greatly reduced.
Yeah, for sure, and I'd support, you know,
there's
a healthy
the Captain
dose.
Antonio. Brian just put up a picture of the Captain Antonio.
Nice.
Now we know.
Nice. What the fuck? I need one of them caps. My buddy Miles, he has one of those caps. He rocks all the time.
That's a good cap. If you're just letting everybody know you like to party.
Miles Teller. Miles Teller. He wears a cap like that all the time.
So that's one of those things. If you walk around with a captain's hat on and you're like a sober guy, you're an asshole.
No. Miles parties, he gets it in. That's my guy. Shout out.
One of those dudes who doesn't smoke weed, doesn't drink, they don't do total straight edge, but you're wearing like a captain's hat, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, it's not
but
good
there's life. Something if you're like some Hunter S. Thompson dude with a captain's hat on, you're on mescaline while you got a bottle of whiskey in one hand, a bottle of vodka in the other. I want to talk to that dude.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah, you know? I'm hanging out with him.
Yeah, there's certain outfits that you're allowed to wear if you get fucked up.
Yeah.
Like the way Stanhope dresses. Like if Stanhope was like a sober guy, that he can't pull off that outfit. You know, he's hammered all the time, so he's wearing this bright checkered leisure suit or whatever he wears.
Yeah, it's every city he goes to a thrift store and tries to find the most shittiest, I guess, suit you could possibly find.
Well, he has stuff that doesn't fit him all the time. It's like barely fits him. He's awesome. So, dude, you're a young man. You're doing very well. Everything is going well for you. This is an exciting time in your life.
Yeah, man, I'm trying.
What's it like to be Kid Cudi?
It's cool, man.
I feel like that's intrusive.
No. I mean, you know, it's nothing too spectacular. I'm mostly like trying to stay creative and hang around family a lot, get family time in with my mom and my daughter, and so like my life is split between that and, you know, creating. You know, it's a good balance. I've found the balance now at 30. Yeah.
At 30. Yeah. Dude, you're living the dream.
Yeah, it's cool, man. I can't complain. Even on the days I complain, I realize I can't complain.
You definitely can't complain. Yeah. No, I mean, to be a professional entertainer is probably the luckiest job of all time. Like, you made it.
Well, it's really deeper than that. I think to just have a fan base, you know, that's supportive is a real ultimate, you know, blessing because, you know, guys get record deals all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of their music is shit, you know, but then...
How dare you?
It's just like, you know, but then when you have... You know, you have a lot of artists that come and, you know, end up having like a grassroots following and they have a fan base that rides with them their entire career. That's a blessing on top of a blessing. You never know because today's audience, you know, these kids like you one minute, they hate you the next, like you one minute, they hate you the next. And to have a loyal fan base in that type of climate, then it's awesome.
Yeah, that is the thing that it used to be. Like if you were a rapper or any kind of entertainer, you were only as good if you were a comedian. You were only as good as the people got to see you out there. Like yeah. It was really difficult to build a fan base if you weren't on something, if you weren't on a television show, right. Or if you weren't, you know, a weekly regular guest like the Tonight Show or something like that.
Right.
It was really hard for someone like build a fan base.
Yeah.
But today, because of the internet. Rappers, singers, musicians, I mean, everybody, comedians, all they can kind of keep tabs on and just communicate with people, like, directly.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like I kind of was at the beginning, the early stages of that wave of, you mm-hmm. know, just, you know, another way for people to find music online, new artists, you know, music that you probably wouldn't hear on the radio.
Yeah.
Stuff that's quality, you know, music. And now, you know, things are way more advanced, even since when I started, you know, when I dropped Day and Night, that was 2007. I think the only platform at that time that I had at my disposal to upload music was MySpace. You
wow.
know, and that was literally how the world discovered my voice, you know, through my MySpace music page. You know?
How did MySpace drop the ball so hard? They had the world by the balls. They had everybody.
I think,
everybody.
I don't even think they've fallen off like that. I just think that there's just so much out there.
There's definitely so much out there.
There's an overabundance of, you know, it's like for every Facebook, there's five more other Facebooks.
Well, there's always new ones coming out too. It's got to be hard to figure out a new thing though. Like, what's the new thing? Does it involve video? What's going to be the new thing?
Memes and emojis.
I think it's just complete. A combination of everything. Just like it's a one-stop shop to just anything. That you can, you know, dick around on the internet with, it's possible through this app, you know?
Yeah, probably, right? I think it's also, have you seen that new thing that Unbox Therapy did a video on? Oh my God, Lewis from Unbox Therapy did this video of this new Iron Man tech. If you go to his page, go to Unbox Therapy, Iron Man For Real, I think it's called, there's a YouTube video that he put up. It's insane.
What does
man.
It do?
You're putting on these gloves, or these goggles, rather, that cover your eyes, sort of Oculus Rift style,
yeah.
But you see everything. I would see you clearly. Yeah. But in front of you, there's like icons and things that I can move around. I can open things and close them, and you do it all with hand gestures. So like as I'm looking at you, if I had these goggles on, I'd be looking at you, and I'd see these floating geometric objects, like
right.
boxes, circles, and you can open them up and close them and move them around, and they
oh, wow.
stay places like Minority Report style.
Oh, shit.
Like, remember he's doing that on the
yeah,
screen?
Yeah, yeah,
but you're going to be able to do it, like, in the air.
Right.
Like, when Tony Stark put that helmet on, he could
yeah,
see a bunch of shit in front
sick.
Of him. That's going to be, like, reality. And in his words, in Lewis's words, he said, this guy wants to make the world the desktop. The world is your screens. He wants to take away screens. And the screens are going to be the world. You
yeah.
put this thing on, and you just see through it, and there's no more screens anymore. Everything you do through this.
That's
this is
sick.
His ultimate goal.
Now, there's a, like, do the glasses look all, like, fucking gnarly, like, you know, some super visor virtual reality
yeah,
type of thing?
Yeah, you can see them. They're right up there. They're pretty big right now. But so was the first phone.
Yeah.
You know, the first...
That's
first,
true.
Remember those home telephones? Those giant boxes? They used to have to crank, call people up, and they used to
oh, wow.
fucking
oh,
put cables into holes and shit. You remember all that? That was what a an old phone used to be like.
But you know what? This type of technology you wouldn't want, you know, walking down the street or like on your everyday that easily to access. I mean, people wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like not that weird that it's kind of big and something that you got to like be stationary with at home.
Yeah.
I think that's actually saves... saves the world in some small way
for a few years.
Until like, you know, Apple figures it out to have it on your phone or something. But
they're gonna make it in like a Google Glass form for sure.
Well, the Google Glass is like just the smaller version of that.
Yeah.
Except you can't, you know, you can't, you swipe and stuff, but you can't really like manipulate the image in real time.
Have you played with it at all?
Yeah, I got one. It's you know, it's cool. I went out in the streets a couple times with it, and I really noticed. I actually tweeted about this. I tweeted about it because it was so funny to me. My experience going out in public with Google Glass is people just really thought that I was either taking a picture of them or filming them, and people were really concerned because there's no like recording light, and you could tell that there's a lens there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And especially once people ask you what it is and you say Google Glass, people have heard about it. They're like, "Are you filming me?" And I thought it was interesting, you know, because this is something that like, you know, you might see a celebrity, you know, freak out because they're getting photographed or filmed trying to, you know, live their lives and do something with their families and try to have some privacy. And then the public really doesn't understand why they might freak out and why that might be intrusive. But, you know, it's a funny twist for me to walk in a place and all of a sudden someone's like, "Oh, are you filming me?" Or, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, like, what are you doing?" And it's just like, "No, I'm not filming a random person that's intrusive, because I understand that that's intrusive."
But it is—it's a potential option for the future. That's what's weird about it.
But it just—it was—it was interesting to just see like that was. Besides people being like, "Ooh, it's cool. Can I try it?" It was just like, "Are you filming me? Like, are you filming me, or are you taking a picture? And how am I supposed to know that you're telling me the truth?"
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Because you could just be lying, and then even if I take it off, it cuts off. So it's not like you could see what I'm seeing when I'm doing it. You know?
Well, they have little cameras. Remember, Stanhope had that Fox show way back then. They had little cameras that would go on glasses, in the eyebrow part of a glass.
Yeah.
And he put his glasses on, and he would walk into some place and do these pranks. And the film was good enough to put on television.
Yeah,
and that
was
a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can film stuff and put it up on your Twitter through the Google Glass, and the photos are pretty quality. I've done it a couple of times.
Wow. It's going to get crazier than that, right? It's going to get to some point where you're going to be able to put contact lenses on or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
But I don't know if I'm... I mean, that's wild, man.
Iron Man shit with contact lenses. And they all have their own... Like, they get charged with solar power.
Yeah.
Because your eyes are always open.
Yeah.
Right? So your eyes are getting constant solar energy, right?
Technology in my eye, though. I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, I definitely don't want it right now. But if it's awesome.
In the future, you might be changing your mind.
Yeah, if everybody has it and it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would have always been tied to a phone just because it's so dope. Like, to have a phone is an incredible thing. You know?
I'd rather have a cyborg arm before I have contact.
A cyborg arm? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But would you... See... The real thing about the cyborg arm that really freaks me out, this is no bullshit, it really does kind of freak me out. We watched this video once of a dude from Australia that got his arm and his leg bit off.
I think I've seen that exactly.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
It's amazing. So this guy had no arm and no leg, but he walked without a limp, and his hands moved around. I mean, it didn't move as good. I mean, he probably couldn't play piano or something like that, but moved pretty goddamn good, a lot better than the old ones that came with like the hook style old ones. And I was thinking, like, this guy is still a person, 100% human, but he has an artificial arm and an artificial leg. Yeah. Like, what if the shark bit everything but his head, and they took his head and they put it on an artificial body? What would that be? Is that still a person? I guess it's a person because it's got a person's head. But what if they said, "Listen, man, this transfer of your head to this artificial body is not working that good. Your body's rejecting it. Your head's rejecting the body. But the good news is we can completely duplicate your brain and put it in this artificial head. So it'll be like your brain, except better, because it's never going to get old and it's not going to rot away." Like, well, are you a person then? Like,
no, because I think your soul is just gone at that point.
I would like to believe that, too. But imagine if that's how people were essentially created in the first place. Just
what if they
slow improvements.
What if they go, "Okay, we're going to take a snapshot of your brain right now because we're going to transfer it to this new body. So anything after this point, you know, you're not going to remember. So then for like 10 minutes before they like pull the plug on this body, you can just abuse the person to death."
You would think it's some ridiculous thing to do to your body, not the existential angst of dying and having no soul. You're thinking about playing with someone's balls when they're asleep. And you're 40. Congratulations.
Speaking of cameras, Joe, I just got one added to my car, so it records everything now that my car does, and it does it on GPS, and then when you watch it on your computer, it shows real-time Google Maps and like a 360 view almost of your car.
Wow.
Or 180 view. Oh, wow. Your front.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's called Roadhog. Hawk. Hog.
Roadhog?
Hawk.
Roadhog?
And what it does is you just put a memory card in there, and it constantly records HD
video.
Where
are the cameras?
The camera is like this little box. It looks like a baby radar detector that you just put underneath your, like behind your rear view mirror.
Uh-huh.
You know? So you just put it on the windshield right there. And you have to run power. I just plug mine into my cigarette lighter. And it connects to GPS, and it records on a memory card.
But where's the cameras?
The camera has a wide-angle lens, so it gets everything in your car, the front of your car, and it also gets sound.
Wow. And it
tracks everything. Because I was just tired of driving around Hollywood, like going to the Comedy Store every night, and then like almost getting in car accidents, crazy crackheads like jumping in the street, like all this shit happening all the time. I'm like, something's going to happen soon, you know, and I don't have this proof.
Like, people have to see this.
Well, you know, in Russia, that's when they had those meteors. They caught those. That's how they caught them. They caught them because those people have dash cams.
Because
apparently, like, fraud and like that kind of shit, like accident fraud, like super common in Russia. Like, they pull shady moves all the time. So a lot of people have those little cameras on their dash to make sure they can resolve disputes. You know, like, there was a thing that was going around in California for a while where people were suing people. They would get in accidents on purpose. A bunch of people died from it. They'd get on the highway, get in front of you, and slam on the brakes.
Right.
So you slam into them. And this one dude who was an illegal alien, so it was like all the Republicans were up in arms. Wait, these illegal, one illegal alien does something shady. Everybody freaks the fuck out. But this dude had done it a couple of times. He'd done it a couple of times, and you know, that was his move. That's why he made a lot of money. Just get in front of people, slam on the brakes.
Crazy.
Yeah, but you know, that's a risky fucking move too. Shit.
Well, when you ain't got nothing to lose, it's like, fuck it.
Yeah, I guess. It's just they're playing the lottery in the promised land.
Yeah.
It's just very, very strange. That's the item?
That's the item. See right there is where you put the memory card in.
Not that big.
No,
it is kind of like, it's hard to tell perspective-wise.
It's like, it's just a little radar
detector.
It's like
a cell phone size, basically. Yeah.
And you just, like, I can't even barely even see my mind's hidden behind my mirror.
Like a disposable camera. That's probably the best way to describe it. It's like a disposable camera.
And what's cool, it does like a DVR loop, like what security companies do, or where they have to film everything, like a jewelry store or something. It just, when it gets to the end of the memory card, it just goes back to the beginning, unless you pull it out and save the files.
Oh,
it's just
it just records over.
Records everything over and over
again. How long before people start making porn with those?
I know.
It seems
But you know what? It's also great.
It's already done.
It automatically turns on. So if you give your card to like a valet or something, you could hear what they're doing.
That's
you could turn it around.
Nice.
That's the new website.
That's what I'll get it for.
That's right.
Send me the link.
Valet porn. Valets blowing each other in your car.
Get
out to your car. You're like, what the hell?
But I'm reviewing it right now. I have a review website now.
So you have a review website now?
JavaLamps.com.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's good. You stopped doing that for a while.
Yeah,
because
I lost my Amazon account.
How does that work, man? Did you ever try to get it back?
Yeah, I tried three times with my LLC social security number or whatever, the business ID number. I tried with them, so it was completely away from me. I tried everything, and finally they just let me through because of this JavaLamps thing.
So they did let you through?
They just finally did after about 4 years of not letting me do it.
Is it because you changed the name of your website?
I guess so. Website and everything, I don't know.
How annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like there was a weird thing. It was like they're upset at you because you're connected to porn, right?
Wasn't that the idea? Because that porn stars on Death Squad.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with porn stars.
Nothing.
Well, don't they sell porn? I mean, if you go to Amazon.com, don't they sell porn?
Yeah.
Could you buy porn on
Amazon.com? They sell vibrators. They sell Hitachis. By the way, did you see Missy Martinez, our friend Missy, who does Kill Tony with us a lot of times? She was on TMZ because her Hitachi blew up in her pussy.
No! Okay. Did it really blow up in her pussy, or did she blow it up in her pussy and make it the equivalent to the Mexican dude slamming on his brakes on the highway? Was it the vibrator equivalent
What happened is it's
to the braking crash.
What happened is it starts sparking and flames and smoke start
is
coming out.
Is there footage?
Of it.
Did she start screaming? Yeah, the pussy's that good. That's why it's sparking.
Oh no!
There's the Hitachi though. And what's weird is that this is not. There's nothing new about this. If you look online, there's tons of Hitachis blowing up in porn stars'
phones.
What? Yeah, because it's the only vibrator that you plug into a wall. So it's like it's like the dumbest. Like, because it's really for your back. Because it's supposed to be high powered. But like, girls are getting so numb down there that they're using these Hitachis. Hitachis, these high-powered ones that just like shave off the walls of their vagina.
Can't just do it anymore.
Yeah,
batteries ain't cutting it.
That's so
my god.
They take things to the next level. It's just like when we were talking about bodybuilders of like the 1960s in comparison to the bodybuilders of today. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same way with like the way girls beat on their pussies.
Absolutely.
I bet in the old days, just a little spit in your fingers, you didn't need anything. They didn't need anything. Their vaginas were super sensitive.
Technology fucked things up.
So did circumcision fuck things up for us. Apparently, if you don't have a foreskin, the head of your dick gets like kind of just abused. It's always bouncing around inside your underwear. And like having a foreskin, the reason why men are upset, they're not just the fact that it's ritual genital mutilation that doesn't make any sense, but also that it kills the sensitivity in your dick.
Yeah, but I mean, that's great.
It's great.
Wouldn't you like your dick to look like Clint Eastwood and not like fucking Ryan Seacrest or something?
That doesn't make any sense.
Because you're beating the tip of your dick up. I mean, if you look at your dick, it looks
if
like...
If you're beating up your dick and it looks like Clint Eastwood today...
Oh, no.
Are you talking about Clint Eastwood from the fucking Outlaw Josie Wales days?
Yeah.
Are you talking spaghetti westerns?
No. I'm talking about Porch One.
The handsome Clint Eastwood, not the crazy-looking old man.
Yeah, get off my
that
porch.
Talks to Obama. Yeah. Well, he talked to Obama. That was do you remember that?
Get off my porch.
Do you remember that shit that he did on TV where he sat Obama down?
No.
You didn't see it?
No.
See it? Oh,
no.
You should watch it. You should watch it.
We'll
pull this
up.
Dude, yeah, we'll put it up.
This was recent?
Oh, my God. It was during the presidential elections.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He pretended to sit Obama down on stage and improvised it. Didn't have anything poignant to say, but improvised it. It was so incredibly disrespectful. It was so
he was
ridiculous.
Just pretending to have a conversation with
him? He sat him down below him. He didn't just have a conversation. He wasn't like pretending to have a conversation with Obama where they're looking eye to eye like men. No, he sat him down in a chair and started it was the strangest fucking thing ever.
This is it here.
Yeah.
He was having that thing, and they were talking about hope and change, and they were talking about, yes, we can, and it was dark and outdoors, and it was nice, and people were lighting candles, and they were saying... I just thought this is great. I mean, everybody's crying. Oprah was crying, and I was even crying. And then finally, I haven't cried that hard since I found out that there's 23 million unemployed people in this country.
Wait, he sat him down here?
Yeah.
To cry for,
yeah.
Where is he sitting?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
I'm home tomorrow morning.
No, you got to back it up, because that's the chair. Like, he puts him down in the chair.
You thought that when you were running for election...
No. Back it up a little bit more.
Possibly, yeah. Now it may be time for somebody else to come along and solve the problem. So, Mr. President, how do you handle promises that you made when you were running for election, and how do you handle it? I mean, what do you say to people? Do you just I know people were wondering. You don't have it. Okay. Well, I know even some of the people in your own party were very disappointed when you didn't close Gitmo. And I thought, closing Gitmo, why close that? We spent so much money on it. But I thought maybe it's an excuse. What do you mean, shut up? I thought it was just because somebody had...
You want to watch the whole thing?
No. It's worse than I remembered.
Hell no.
It's worse than I remembered. I remembered it being bad, but holy shit.
I like how CNN like jumped to like the MTV camera where they're in the audience and it's all shaky, like to try to make it more like entertaining him talking to a chair.
Oh my god, so ridiculous. What the hell is he doing? He's being an old dude. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Being an old Republican dude. They get all crusty, conservative. Not like, then they don't like the youth, the young of America, like yourself.
Didn't he just do that movie, though? What was it? Well, he's like, the movie you were just talking about.
About the immigrants?
He's really pissed about people being on his porch.
Yeah. What was that movie called again?
I don't know.
It was named after
El Camino. El Camino is...
El Camino.
That's Black
Bumblebee.
Keys.
Gran Turismo.
El Camino is the Grand... No, the Black Keys. The Black Keys have a CD called El Camino.
Yeah.
Don't they?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, El Torito. Whatever it was.
El Torino.
Gran Torino.
I said that. Did I? No?
I had a friend whose girlfriend had one of those cars way back in the day. That was a goofy-ass car. That was back in America, just made these houses on wheels. They made a living room. They just drove around in these big old fucking crazy American cars, man. Yeah, that was a movie about what? It was like about immigrants, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was
people moving in his neighborhood.
I've just seen the previews. I just remember seeing that in the preview and being really pissed about kids being on his porch.
Yeah, that's all I remember. Yeah. Too.
But I mean, I was sold. I mean, I wanted to see it. I just never got around to it. Maybe I'll check it out.
I think you got better shit to do with your time.
I don't know. Seeing Clint Eastwood being pissed about people being on his front porch. I mean, he had a shotgun in his hand, too.
I remember
he was on my porch.
Well, do you remember when Clint Eastwood did a reality show? A lot of people don't remember that. Yeah. See,
what's this?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Clint Eastwood's wife was on a reality show before he got divorced. He divorced her. But she was on a reality show. And it was like some knucklehead show. It was ridiculous. But was he on episodes? I don't remember if he was on it. I never watched it. But, yeah. It's one of those things where, like, the wife wanted to do it, and he was like, oh, okay. He finds himself in some ridiculous situation.
Have you ever met him?
No.
I always see him in Burbank because I think he has a studio at Warner Brothers, so he's always walking on the sidewalk out there, and it's weird just driving by going, is that?
Dude, that guy gets a pass for life for me, for The Unforgiven. That, I think, is the greatest cowboy movie of all time.
Oh, yeah.
That shit was, like, it was so realistic.
So dope.
That was such a good, scary-ass cowboy movie. That was Clint Eastwood at his finest.
Yeah.
You know?
I just love how he's just like, I don't live that no more. The whole movie's just like, I'm not that guy. I love it.
And then they just dragged him in. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah, let's not tell him.
But he's like one of those dudes that becomes this old guy, and then he becomes, like, super-duper conservative.
Yeah.
You know? There's a bunch of those guys. Like, Cosby's a guy like that. He's, like, super-duper conservative now. John Voight.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that movie though is one of my favorites, especially Morgan Freeman too. One of my favorite Morgan Freeman movies.
Fuck yeah, 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 man. That was just a perfect movie.
Like the dialogue, everything. Yeah,
yeah. Just the way I don't want to give away the ending, but the way it all goes down, so much more likely than most of those stupid shoot 'em up movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just that was much more probably like the way people would behave.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, it was, and it ended up getting messy in there, but I like how it kind of just started off like real chill, and you kind of just, you know, oh hey,
yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah, that's a fascinating look at the old West. That was like he's almost like he did it like he did all those westerns back in the day, like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and the fun movies.
Yeah,
but they weren't super realistic.
Yeah.
You know, and I think as he got older, I mean, I'm just speculating, but he wanted to do one more that really got it right. Like, the way they make movies today, as opposed to the way they made movies back in, like, High Plains Drifter days.
Did you see True Grit?
Yeah, I saw both. I saw the old one and the new one. It was not bad.
The new one.
It was not bad. It was not a bad movie.
I liked it.
It's just, whenever you have a movie where you're redoing an old movie, people are harsh, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean... But, you know, I feel like it kind of brought some of that realness that, you know, Unforgiven had.
Yeah, definitely did. Yeah. There was I mean, it was a good movie, for sure. There was a lot of fun shit going on in that movie. But, goddamn, man, remaking a John Wayne movie is hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, Hollywood, they do what they can. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, most of the shit that comes out that gets regurgitated, you know.
It's got to be hard to make movies, man. You know, one of the beautiful things about... Do you write all your own lyrics?
Yes, thank God. I've been blessed with that ability, you know? A lot of guys don't.
See, think of that. Just think of that, like how happy you are that you write all your own shit.
Yeah.
And imagine, this is, so you're a one-man situation, you know? If you want the Kid Cudi experience, you only go through one door. There's no one else right? So they go to you. But you don't have to worry about the producer getting along with the director, getting along with the actor. Yeah. The network has notes, or the studio rather has notes about the script. The screenwriter wants to change this, and the actor wants to improv that. And you're managing it out with a fucking makeup lady who's fucking the hairdresser, and everybody's doing blow after the set's closed down. It's craziness, man. Making a movie's
it can
be
go
really
down
hard.
Like that in music, though, too. You know, if I did, you know, my career is just purely my vision and stuff, so it's a different, it's a little unorthodox than, you know, what most people do. You know, the average, you know, pop star, it might be about, you know, six people involved just to get the album together. You know, somebody to get songwriters, somebody to get producers in the room, you know, and then there could be chemistries off. You know, this person might not mess with this writer, and this producer might not mess with this artist, and there's all this going on. And I'm pretty sure it gets messy, but this I've just been blessed not to deal with that. You know, I had an idea of, you know, what I wanted my career to be, and I've been sticking to that goal and that plan. You know, and
what was the idea? If you could give us like a one line of it,
man, I really just truthfully wanted to tell my story, and hopefully it inspired others to not feel alone, you know, and understand that they could persevere through anything, you know. And at that time of writing, I like to tell people, I don't even know if I believed half of the shit I wrote, you know. Like when I made Pursuit of Happiness, I was hopeful for happiness, but I was in such a dark place that song for me was more of a nightmare more than, you know, supposed to be a happy, uplifting song.
You were in a dark place. How so?
Well, just like, I think coming to terms with just the fame factor. You know, I always felt like I would get some type of recognition, you know. I didn't know to what magnitude. And, you know, people say like, oh, you know what you signed up for, but like, we really don't, you know. And you kind of have an idea and you feel like, oh, it'd be cool. But like, I didn't, and I still to this day, I don't look in the mirror and see myself how other people see me. You know, so I never could prepare myself for what came, and everything came so fast. You know,
that brought on darkness.
Yeah, because I wasn't comfortable, and then I had to, you know, I was in a place where it was like all this pressure all of a sudden to be something, and to deliver, you know, a certain type of quality, and these are things that I stepped up to the plate and I was excited about doing, but I didn't know that it would stress me out to that magnitude that it did, you know. I just didn't know that many people would be watching and paying attention or care that much, you know.
What was the number one consequence?
I just think I didn't see it being too big of a consequence that I couldn't deal with, you know, losing a lot of my freedom. But now that I have a daughter, you know, I just worry so more about her now, you know, and I just want her to have a normal life, and I want her to, you know, have that opportunity. And now I think about it more now than I did then, you know, before she was born.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I have children. When you have children, it really becomes more about them than it does even about you in a lot of ways. Because it's like the way you live your life is now always going to be like, what's the best way for them?
Right.
And if it's not that way, you're going to feel sick.
Right.
You're going to feel like you're doing something wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a weird situation when you bring people into this world. You're responsible for little tiny people. And you got to teach them shit and raise them. And it's really hard. I mean, I wouldn't say no one, because I think people are capable of intellectualizing it. But most people have no idea, I should put it that way, how intense the love a person has for their kid is.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, you know, you have to have. You have to have a child to experience. You know, you can't explain it. You know, it's just, I mean, my daughter is, man, she's everything, man.
It's also why, like, when you see kids that are abused, it's so extra disturbing.
Yeah.
Because it's almost unimaginable.
Who would do that? You know?
Who would do that to anyone's kid? And who would do that to their own kid? It's just, You know, I've met people that have their parents beat them, and it's a fucking weird place to be. Talk to someone who, the person they love more than anything, beats the shit out of them when they do something wrong. You know?
And there's a difference between a whooping and then a beating.
Well, this Adrian Peterson thing, this NFL thing, the guy who beat his kid with a stick, you know, and the excuse is that, I guess, like, when he was young, that's how they treated him. That's how he was raised. Like, I don't know what the kid did that was so horrible. How old was this kid, do you know?
Man, I don't even be reading into that
really
stuff,
young, right? Like 9 or something like that? Well, whatever it was. When, you know, when they talk about it, they say, well, this is the way he grew up. Which is true, but man, there's got to be a way to end that cycle. You can't be beating kids with sticks in 2014. I mean, everybody should know that by now.
I just think it's a cop-out for people to use that as an excuse. We're like, that's how I was raised. Even, like, just with anything, you know, because that's just a cop-out. That's just somebody not wanting to change and grow with the times. I mean, if we could find any way to be less violent, we should try it.
Yeah, certainly anything where there's victims involved.
Yeah.
Like, especially if the victim's a little kid.
Yeah.
And you, by the way, if you get kids used to the idea that the person they love the most, their parents, is a person who's going to beat them and hit them with things, you are introducing violence into that kid's life at a very early age, and that violence becomes a natural part of the world. It becomes something they expect. That's why they say that, you know, people who are around their parents beating each other up are more likely to be involved in abusive relationships when they get older. They say it's that kids, people who are hit by their parents, or people watch their parents hit each other and were hit by their parents, it's even worse, apparently.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, who's to say? I mean, my mom spanked us, you know, but she had three boys to deal with by herself majority of the time, you know?
It's and hard,
I mean,
man.
It's not like, you know, I don't, you know, look at my mom as a villain and, you know, but she didn't beat us. I can't say, like, I've been beaten by my mom. Like, when I did some hoe-ass shit, you know, my mom reprimanded me and I deserved it. You know when you're doing some sucker shit as a kid, you know, especially before you do it. You know, and you know that there's a consequence that comes with that. But I've never experienced that, you know, what I'm pretty sure a lot of people are, you know, talking about right now with just, like, thinking it's okay to beat up on your kids. But, like, my daughter's 4 and a half. I haven't had to reprimand her in that way, and I never will. You know what I'm saying? That's just not how I do.
I think it's a different situation, too, when you got a single mom dealing with young sons. Like, shit can get really unruly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like,
totally different.
But even with that, they weren't beatings.
Right. It's a
reprimand. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's like a difference, man.
Yeah, that is a big difference. And that's something that people don't like to admit, right? It's never good to beat your kids. But if you're a young woman who's raising young boys and they don't respect you,
you get the ass.
Shit.
I got yardsticked.
Yeah. You got yardsticked?
Yeah, my mom had a yardstick.
Where'd she hit you?
On my ass. But it never hurt. Like, she would smack, and I'm like, oh, okay, I deserve that.
Right. Exactly. You're just more humiliating.
It's not like strip down naked.
No.
You know, after you're out the shower, catch you off guard, you know.
Take the yardstick. It's aluminum. Heat it on fire until it's fucking white hot.
Yeah. Nope, none of that.
I saw a video of these fucking idiots. One kid put a hot iron. The kid lost a bet. So he put a hot iron on his back, like, and left the iron mark.
Oh, that's for life, too.
Yeah.
That's not going to
most likely. Yeah. Fucking
it's a brand.
College kids, man. Kids today. And kids today that are trying to make videos of all this shit, too. That's like half the thing, that they're making videos while they're doing this stupid shit.
That's the motivation. It's like, let's show people how fucking idiotic we can be.
World star.
We're lucky more people aren't dead. It seems like people just be killing themselves accidentally left and right trying to make these fucking videos.
Did you see that video? I'm not sure if it's 100% real or not, but the girl boils water and then films her taking this huge thing of boiling water and pouring it over a dude's head, and he's like, there's pictures of him just, he's been in the hospital with like all these burns all over his body from it.
Kidding?
Yeah, just from a video.
Was this like an ALS?
Yeah, it was like Ice Bucket Challenge, but boiling water. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's totally serious. I'll find it for you.
No, I don't want to watch that. Oh my God, people are so stupid. I bet it's probably real. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's real, but I bet it's probably real. People are dumb as shit, man. Mm-hmm. Fuck, man.
That saddens me.
Yeah.
Fuck.
That's not cool.
Yeah, you can overhear some conversations that'll make you lose your faith in humanity.
Yeah.
If you imagine if you were there in their goofy-ass backyard, but thinking about throwing boiling water on this kid.
Yeah,
you'd be like, you know, that is going to fuck you up for the rest of your life. Like, you're going to be covered in scars. Like, that might as well be lava, you idiot.
Yeah, that's how your life is changed forever after that.
Yeah, I mean, at very least, it's going to be some pretty significant scarring, right? Boiling water?
Oh, yeah.
The medical bills for that, you know?
Just the pain and suffering just for one stupid-ass video where people can think you're an idiot.
Ugh. Have scar tissue on your face for the rest of your life because of it.
Oh,
so
God.
Were these kids, were they reprimanded and...
Yeah, it didn't really get into that part. It just showed the video of the girl doing it, boiling the water, and doing it on him. And then,
so this didn't make like the news.
No, I think it made the news because there's a photo of him later where he's just sitting there all burnt, like, and bandaged up. His whole body's all fucked up.
Fuck, man. What is this desire to make these fucking goofy videos?
It's horrible. And bullying now has taken it to the next level because kids are all filming them bullying people and then putting it online. So now it's...
What do you mean bowling?
Bullying.
Bullying.
Yeah,
Jesus
bullying.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry. Bullying.
I'm like, they're going bowling?
They're going bowling.
I thought there was like a new bowling thing videos. Where you like roll in a fetal position and knock people down like pins. I was really trying to figure out what you were saying.
But yeah, but people are taking videos of them beating up other kids and then putting it online and sharing it around the class and stuff. So now you just see these videos of these poor kids getting bullied.
Well, how are these kids not getting in trouble? I mean, can't
they are.
They are now. Trouble, but the act's already being done.
Yeah.
We live in weird times. Weird times. It's like we were talking about earlier about people worrying about your Google Glasses recording them. People, they're recording everything. And kids are growing up with that. It's like a normal part of life.
Yeah.
You know, when you first got into the internet, would you say you were in your late high school days when you really started getting into it?
Yeah, because that was, I mean, we ain't had no
computer. You're 30 now.
We ain't had no computer except at the schoolhouse, so that was the only time. And then you couldn't really explore that much, you know.
It wasn't much out there.
Because, well, there was stuff out there, but, I mean, the teachers kept it restricted. You know, there were certain sites you couldn't go to, and... You know, you couldn't watch porn and stuff, which was a big bummer back then. This is a big bummer.
Can they do that? They can block stuff now in schools, right? Do they block stuff at like universities?
They have to, man. I mean, the internet is just so much more on there now than it was back then.
But do they allow like porn sites, like in dorms? Can kids get download porn?
Well, I mean, Jamie, you don't even have to go to a site no more. You know,
you don't, but. You could always just download it, right, from like a torrent?
Well, you could just Google porn and it'll be right there.
Right, that's true. Yeah, but I was just wondering, like,
whether
I'm giving
out tips, guys, by the way. Take these.
What's your favorite site?
You just Google it and it's right there. It's there. Which camera do I look in? Which
one
is
mine? The one behind you.
Right here.
No.
It's right there.
It is right there. Dude, you're a natural pitchman for the internet.
Yeah.
You should be like the internet's official spokesperson.
Man, they need to hit me up. Let's go.
So you know, getting out of high school and then growing up, like, essentially, like, your young teens, your 20s, all that, like, being able to, like, get online at school and then being, like, completely immersed, like, being a part of, like, interactive communities, talking to people. That's, you know, you're like one of the first generations of musicians that's able to do that. That's able to go like directly from high school into communicating online with people, releasing stuff online, and then, you know, becoming a part of this first generation. I mean, there's a bunch now. There's like a lot of artists that are becoming really well known because of just interacting with people online.
Yeah. Not even putting out any music. Just being online and, you know, whatever, having an identity on the internet, you know?
Yeah, there's that too, right? That's something that people value about you as well. It's not just that, you know, they like your music. They like you. They like to talk to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you've got a cool personality. Like, you're a cool guy on... Thank you. You're a cool guy on social media, you know? You're yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's important, though. I think... It is my job and my calling to also show the world a different type of person in the position that I'm in. You know, someone, you know, isn't really big into conforming because of my job, because, you know, of the people around me, because of the people I work with. You know, I always tell people I'm a human being first before anything. You know, you're born naked, you go in a really nice suit, you know, and everything that happens in between is just madness, and we figure it out along the way. But, you know, it's really interesting how a lot of people just kind of like, you know, get this blessing, this job, getting this business, and they just, you know, get really caught up. And I never wanted to be that guy. And the beauty of Twitter, it's like, at first I was really against it because it just was so much, you know, unfilteredness, and I've learned to appreciate it. Like, literally, I get a lot of confidence just by looking at my feed and seeing maybe a couple tweets that are like, yo, man, keep doing it.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily doing anything right now. I don't have any music coming out, but it's just a random Tuesday. And there's some kid in Minnesota that's like, yo, I fucking love you, dude. Keep going. We're listening. And I might have needed to hear that day. Mm. You know, so like, those kids don't know that means that much to me. And it does. So like, I wasn't really that big with talking, you know, and having such a presence online because I was weird about it. But now that I got a grip over it, it's no problem for me. I love that I can, you know, just hit up a kid randomly and just make their whole year, you know, and just
give
them some confidence or something. That's using it for good, you know, rather than me posting a picture of some jewelry or some new $1,000 sneakers I bought that doesn't do anybody any good other than being like, damn, I ain't got shit. You know, that's the reality that people realize. And then it's like, well, I need to do what I got to do so I can have what he have. And I don't want people to think like that. You know, like when I post, I like to post like, you know, maybe my lactate milk or, you know, it's like, you know, like some like.
So does this come from like lessons that you've learned watching other people and but like their behavior?
Oh, yeah.
You felt like the shortcomings of their behavior once they became famous?
Oh, yeah, man. I watched everybody around me, you know, and I think and I kind of use. I want kids to look at me and understand what not to do. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was dealing with my drug issues back in 2010, 2009, you know, I was just heavy into cocaine. And it was like a big thing for me. Yeah.
Cocaine.
And it was like a really big thing for me. And it was something that, you know, kept me level. It was something that I felt like I needed, self-medicating. And you know.
So you felt like cocaine kept you level?
Yeah, man, because I had this whole technique where... I don't know if I even should get into this. I don't even want to talk about this.
These you don't have to
fucking run around and talk and do it, you know. But let's just say I got into like, you know, what I would call like, you know, a trifecta, which was, you know, I would wake up in the morning, I would you know, do coke immediately, even before I had cereal, breakfast.
Whoa.
And then I would have a beer. And then I would smoke weed. So like, I never wanted people to know I was doing cocaine. So the beer and the marijuana leveled me out in a way where I was able to walk in the streets and talk and seem as though I wasn't on anything. But deep inside, I'm just like, zing, you know, with my face. I'm just like, yeah, that's right. You know, but what it did for me, it completely numbed me. I didn't care about anything, and I was a robot. But also, with being so numb, it allowed me to go out and meet my fans and be out in the street. So in a twisted way, it did a positive thing for me, and that's why I didn't see it as an issue. It was like, damn, today I went walking in Soho with no place to go, and I was just high-fiving fans and shit. Like, it was just the most, you know, amazing experience, something that I never get a chance to feel because I'm just like such a recluse, and I'm just at that time was just weirded out when people recognized me and just didn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's an issue with substances that can help you in some ways, but they're ultimately detrimental to your health or your well-being or your ability to keep it together.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, I abused it. It's not like the guy who like goes out with his buddies in spring break and it's like, hey, let's do a bump, and it's like, hey, cool. You know,
those guys aren't real. Those guys are only people in movies, man. Everybody else is just too broke to keep going. They just don't have the amount of money that it requires to be a fucking full-time cokehead.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely expensive, man. It was definitely expensive. But, you know, I
did you find, like, while you were doing it every day, like, was there a thing that made you stop? Because that's usually, there's like a moment. You got caught.
And then people started to know I did it. And
you got arrested?
Yeah, and it was like, damn, now everybody knows I do it. This is not cool anymore. Like, it's only cool when no one knows.
Coke is a weird one, right?
Yeah, it's like, I didn't let the public make me feel bad about it, though. It was just kind of like, fuck, guess I can't do that no more. And then also my daughter was born. So it was like, you know, it was two kind of life lessons back to back that I experienced in 2010. And, you know, my daughter's birth and being arrested were those two things, because I think I had already started toning down my cocaine use the beginning of that year. But then I was the king of like something
tragic happening or something I felt was tragic or stressful, and then spiraling back into it, just needing any excuse to be like, all right, I'm going to go do cocaine now because I'm upset and I'm dealing with something I don't know how to deal. It's just like my way of copping out and avoiding my issues.
Wow.
You know, so it was like a block. It was like maybe a couple months would go by. I'd be in Hawaii, you know, working on some stuff with Kanye, and I never did cocaine or anything around those guys. That was like my time to detox when I would be away. Because, you know, if you do coke, you're either doing coke with other people, you know, or alone. And I felt weird about traveling the world and every place I was at asking people where the drugs was at. So, like, it was something that I did, you know, at home and at a certain time, you know, and which was, you know, I was able to, like, kind of keep it together and go out and work on my music and be into it. I had a system. It was a weird, sick system I developed, you know, for myself, you know, where... You know, I was able to be cool if I wasn't in New York, but then when I was back in New York, it was on, you know, because it was just like being at home in the apartment alone for hours on end just really just got me, you know,
right.
And doing it just kind of like, oh, man, I could just put on Leaky Lee and just chill out for hours by myself and it's all good.
It's interesting that like the arrest made you want to stop because was it because like the feeling like, oh, shit, an event has taken place, like this is obviously a big sign that I'm going down the wrong direction. I'm dealing with the legal system now. I'm getting arrested.
Nah, it was just more like, this is not Scott Mescudi. How in the hell did I let this become Scott Mescudi? How in the fuck do I got people looking at me like I'm not Scott Mescudi? And I know what it was, and I know how to fix that. And I went and made, I didn't like how people were looking at me at that moment in time.
So they were looking at you like you're a coke fiend.
Yeah, crazy, cracked out dude. Like everywhere I would go, it was just these looks. And I was just like, man, I just did a little blow. What the fuck, you know? Get off my back, you know what I mean? Like, y'all motherfuckers acting like, y'all, I ain't never did a bump. Get out of here, man. Like, it was so, I was just like, are you kidding me?
People love to be sanctimonious.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing. When it happened, I wasn't like, you know, on, you know, the next complex interview I did, like, I have a statement that I issued here. This camera. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry to all my fans for you guys knowing that I do cocaine now. Well, I used to. I don't do it anymore. I'm sorry if I let anyone down. Fuck that. You know? Fuck that. It was really just like, I'm dealing with some shit. If you don't understand it, I don't give a fuck. This is how I was surviving. If I didn't do it, I would have blew my brains out.
Well, I like how you describe it, too, because you're very honest about the positive aspects of the effects, and I think that's super important.
And this was my contract, by the way.
The release?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, man.
Sorry.
Don't worry about it.
I'm an actor. Everything's a prop.
You're very method. You're very honest about the positive benefits of it. Like, people have this idea, like, you shouldn't talk about positive benefits of any drugs. Whether it's harmless drugs like marijuana or dangerous drugs like cocaine, maybe even especially dangerous drugs like cocaine, because the reality of what you're saying, your experience and the positive aspects of your experience, it's like, he's promoting drugs when clearly you're doing just the opposite.
Yeah.
You're talking about how you needed them and used them and they helped you, but the reality is it was because you were dealing with an issue.
Right.
And it just helped mask the issue, but it did help. Yeah. And to lie and deny that, it clouds the issue. For people dealing with their own drug issues, dealing with their current drug issues or their past drug issues, if people aren't honest about it, man, it puts people in this weird place where, like, you know what? If I wasn't for fucking meth, I would have never started this business. You know, look, the reason why I'm doing so well is because I got on meth.
Like, yeah, I mean,
there's some people that can say that, probably.
Well, the only reason why I could sit here and say that is because, like, I've been 4 years clean, man. Mm-hmm. I'm not, like...
Right, you're not dipping back in.
Yeah, and I can speak about it candidly, and it's not something I'm weird about, and I've just grown so much since then. And I also know that the more I talk about it, you know, the more it'll help somebody else who might be dealing with it, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
When you're in that, it's probably just, it seems like you can't get out of it, because it is like a thing, you know what I mean?
A cycle.
And you get caught up in it, and... You know, I just know with kids listening to me talk now, it could be helping a lot of people. I'm not like one of those people now that used to do cocaine and I'm like, oh, you're bad if you do cocaine, or cocaine's bad and you shouldn't do cocaine. Man, I don't promote any drug, but I'm not judging anybody if they do it.
Right.
You know, it's not like a big deal. Like, I did it and I just abused it in a way, and it didn't benefit me. It didn't benefit Scott. I didn't like the person I was becoming. There's some people that could do this shit and they could live and do it in moderation and it doesn't affect their lives like how it affected mine. More power to them. They got superpowers if you ask me. But I just have that, you know, it's a history of drugs in my family. It was like my blood was waiting. It was let's go. And I know that about myself. And I just had to make that choice. I had to make a choice. And I think that's with anything. Cigarettes, and which I'm, you know, 4 months, 5 months done with now. You know, you just have to make a choice. And I made that choice, you know, for myself, for my own health, for my daughter, for her future, for my fans, you know.
Yeah, a bunch of people quit cigarettes because their Anthony Bourdain quit cigarettes because of his daughter, too. I just realized, like, what am I doing?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, my father passed away from cancer. All my uncles passed away from cancer. And my father died when I was 11, you know. So that was an experience, you know, for me that kind of, like, traumatized me in such a way. But I can't, you know, when I got older, I started to, you know, do everything that my father was into. Like, my dad smoked Newports. I started smoking Newports at 17. Oh. You know, my dad's, you know, he loved MGD, Miller Genuine Draft. I fucking drank MGD, Miller Genuine Draft, you know. It was like
a tribute to him?
No, I just kind of was becoming my dad in a weird way. And you know, it wasn't, you know, it was like one of those things where, you know, I don't know. I just kind of, I never really had a relationship with him. So the only memories I had was just this guy, like, you know, like this guy was just so cool. He had his cigarette and he had his beer and he was always awesome and he was there for me as a man and up until he left, you know. And I think I kind of got caught up in that. And that's something that, like, you know, I can't say the image of my father drinking and smoking is what made me drink and smoke, but I can't say it didn't.
Right. Do you think you took, like, comfort in it, maybe? Like,
I think maybe, yeah, for sure. I think everybody takes comfort in smoking cigarettes. It's like, you know, one of those things.
Yeah, yeah. That's the grand trick that cigarettes pull on you. They give you comfort in that need to replenish. Like, they give you a little stimulant from the nicotine and all the chemicals that are in the cigarette, yeah. And then you're so addicted to it that you have this weird stress when you don't have it. And then when you smoke it, it relieves that stress. Yeah. And you think that it's actually calming you down, but all it's doing is feeding the dragon.
It's like a drug. It's anything.
Oh, it's a drug.
Yeah.
Nicotine is one of the craziest drugs of all time.
Because it's legal as fuck, and you could just get it anywhere.
Kills everybody.
And it's like they present it in such a way where it's all cool, but, you know, and I don't. And that's another thing, too. I'm not like anti-smokers either. Like, friends come over my house. If they smoke, I don't shush them outside, you know? Like, you can smoke in a house. It's not that
really?
Big a deal.
You don't mind people stinking up your house? They're stinky-ass cigarettes?
It don't bother me. I smoke for a long time. And, you know, it's not like I got people chain smoking in the house. Somebody needs a cigarette or one or two. You know, it's cool.
I have friends that used to smoke, and if they smell it, they get sick.
Nah,
just,
I'm cool with it.
They can't. They just...
I'm cool with it. I just... It's more just like... For people that can't stand it, it's people that might still have an issue with the addiction. But if I smell it or anything like that, it's kind of just like, huh, it's not for me. It doesn't really bother me.
You don't have a pull that doesn't pull you towards it? You don't want to smoke it again?
I mean, I can't say, like, occasionally, and this is something that just will forever happen because I was addicted to this shit. But, like, I can't say, like, after a meal, a really good meal, I'm like, oh, man, a cigarette would be nice. But I don't do that no more. So that's that. And then that's it.
Wow, good for you.
You know what I mean? But I got hypnotized, so.
Is that what happened?
Yeah,
you went to hypnotist?
Yeah, yeah. And
do you remember them hypnotizing you?
Yeah, yeah. I remember.
Because so you were have conscious to listen the whole time.
You have to receive the information, you know, that he's telling you. You have to, you know, really process what he's saying. Because it's really a re-education of the dangers of, you know, it's kind of like what we learned in health class when we were in school as kids. You know, it's no different except, you know, over time, the fear is not, you know, as heightened as it was when we were fourth graders sitting in the room with our teacher saying, like, oh, it does, your lungs are nice and pink like this. Ooh. And if you smoke, they're black like this. Ah! You know, like, it's not. Over time, we see pop culture. We see the James Deans. We see everything going on, and then it doesn't seem as dangerous. And basically, this guy reminds you of the dangers and kind of reboots you. And then it's like, oh, shit, it is kind of. And as an adult, you take it a little bit. It's really funny just how the cycle of life goes. It's like, at my age, I guess, I was able to look at it in the same way I saw it as a fourth grader. you know, and just kind of realize, oh, this is hurting me.
So talk me through it. Do you lie down on the couch and close your eyes? They turn the lights down?
Well, I had them come to my crib, you know, because I wanted to feel comfortable. And I had a knife there, so if he tried any funny business, I was going to slit him ear to ear. I was just going,
Did you worry?
You know, I thought he would try, you know, touch me. I didn't know what was happening. I had a shank underneath my pillow in case.
There's a comedian that used to come to the comedy store. No bullshit. There was a comedian that used to go to the comedy store that used to hypnotize women. his thing was that he was a comedian, but he also like did some hypnotist work. And like he would always hypnotize girls. And like I remember very clearly, one time I was walking to the back of the comedy store and he was talking to a girl and she just pulls her head away and she goes, "No, I don't want you to hypnotize me." And I was like, wow, it's true. The dude really is out there hypnotizing people.
That's fucked up, man. That's so not cool.
Do you do it in your bed?
No, we were in the living room on the couch and he kind of just sits there and he, you know, counts you down.
Did you lie down?
And go to sleep.
You sit up on your back. Okay, mm-hmm. So you fully stretched out, pillow behind the head, just relaxing.
Yep.
And then when they count you down, what does it feel like?
It feel like you tired as hell. You like slipping. You like slipping into like, you know,
a dream
state.
Just really relax.
It's like,
had you been hypnotized before this?
No.
First time.
Only time.
Well, only
he
once.
He does it three times.
Three times.
Three in three separate sessions. They're weeks apart.
Oh. Does it feel different each time you do it, or does it feel the same?
No, after the first time, it's like he does his thing. It's like after the first one, it's like you don't, you can smoke between. So it's like we did ours from Tuesday to Tuesday. So it came that Tuesday, that whole week I was allowed to smoke, right? After the first session, after the first therapy session and the hypnosis. Then after that second week, you're done completely. Then after that third week, it's like kind of like reestablishing that it's done, and that's the final one.
Wow.
But after that first one, it's like the final week, right? So to come out of that hypnosis and still, you know, him telling me like I can still smoke, I still had this urge to like, I don't know if I want to do that. You know, like I was allowed to smoke. He said it was cool. I remember like my first cigarette after like the hypnosis, I waited like a couple hours. Like I had that urge, but I wasn't so quick to jump into it.
Why did he say you could smoke? What's the logic behind it? Did you ask him?
It just kind of like to I don't know, to
lessen the
give
blow.
It a minute to, or give you that last week to just know that this is going to be up after, because he tells you like, all right, so this last week you can smoke, and then after that second session you're done.
So yeah. When you're going under and he's telling you, I'm going to count you down, and then boom, you're under. Do you remember the first things he said to you? Like, were you conscious of it?
Yeah. He's just basically, you know, just talking about, you know, just the dangers of just cancer and what it could do to you and how it's just nasty and it's poison and just everything you could imagine that will kind of put it in the way for a human being to understand and get it, like, okay, this is dangerous, because that's really what it is. I think the average person that smokes doesn't see the danger in it like that, because you might see, you know, the old lady that's 80, 90 years old that's been smoking all her days that looks like she's fine, you know, and you just be like, well, I'll probably be that lady, or I'll probably be that guy, or, you know what
I mean? Right.
But the reality is you don't know, you know, and it's like a gamble every time, and it's like literally him just kind of, he'll give me scenarios too, and I don't even know how much I can really talk about, because he sells this. This is like a thing.
Right.
But you know, he just really gives you examples. You know, of just like scenarios, like simple example, like if you knew someone was, you know, if you were dating a girl and you knew that, you know, she was known for poisoning her boyfriends. Whoa. Putting like poison or rat poison in her food, but there wasn't real proof. But every guy she dated kind of got murdered.
But she did.
and you know, were dating her for a while, and she said, you know, she wanted to finally cook for you.
Oh no. Oh no.
You know, like what would you do? You know what I mean? Like, would you, if you knew for a fact that she was, you know, a killer, would you let her cook your food? Would you let this person into your house? No. You would say, I'm not fucking with this chick. I mean, guys stop messing with a chick if she calls too many times. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of the reality of like, man.
Well, anytime you see any obsessive behavior or anything dangerous.
Yeah,
in people.
Yeah. But it's kind of just that reality. Like, it's poison. Right. You're going out your way to buy poison to put in your system.
So you felt much more in touch with the reality of what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so, you know,
I've just always been curious about, like, what the state is like of being hypnotized. Like,
you don't feel disconnected. No, I felt like I could have woke up at any minute. I felt like if somebody or if he tried something, I could have smacked the shit out of him.
You were really worried about him trying something the second time.
Yo, because, bro, like, just like you, you know what I'm saying? If you've never done hypnosis and you see in the movies, it just looked like you kind of, like, vulnerable.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't know what extent that would feel like. You know, I didn't want to be, like...
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? So,
Have you ever seen, like, one of those comedy hypnotist shows?
No.
You should go and check one out.
Where they make people bark like a dog or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just one guy that does it particularly, right? He's known for it.
Well, there's a bunch of people all over the country to do it.
Ah, okay. I mean, so this is like a thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's a thing, man. I've seen it. When I was starting out in Boston, there was this comedy club called Stitches, and they had a guy named Frank Santos who did it there all the time. And I thought it was bullshit at first. And then from being there all the time, I got to see all these shows. I realized, like, whoa, no, you can just hypnotize some people.
Oh, yeah.
And you get some dudes to come in their own pants. They would think they were having sex. They would think having sex on stage, and they would be on the ground, like, humping, and he would tell them when they were going to come, and they would come, and they'd be embarrassed, and they'd go and sit down.
Yeah, I'd be embarrassed, strange. Too. It's like somebody with a ghost hand coming there, jerking you off when you're not noticing it.
It was so strange.
It's not cool.
Some people, apparently, are super susceptible to it. But he knew when people were under and when they weren't under. That's why I'm always confused. Like, you were conscious, but you were under.
Yeah, like, he'll do things like, I want you to, you know, say yes. You know, so he'll, you know, to check and make sure that you're under or whatever. There's certain things that he'll do, like, and I'm paying for it. So it's not like, you know, I'm not lying.
Right, you know, what is under, though? That's what's confusing to me. What is that state?
I guess
like halfway,
like,
between dreaming and awake?
I mean, I'm definitely, like... The under state is more just like a relaxed feeling, not like sleep.
Right.
But it can be, you know, you could feel like it's sleep because you're breathing slower, and that's what sleep is. Like, you know, you're relaxed, and to us, that's what sleep feels like, you know, that relaxed state.
But you're conscious.
I hear him crystal clear. I'm not in deep sleep. You know, it feels like it, but I'm not. I'm hearing everything clearly. I'm understanding him. You know, so I'm not snoring here. It's not like...
Gotcha.
It's not weird. You feel present, but then you just are really, really chill.
So it's just basically like some weird middle state.
Yeah, it's the in-between of some shit that happens that motherfuckers know how to do.
Wow.
Like, I don't know. Like, I've never experienced anything like it.
What's the difference between session one and session two and then session three?
The difference between session one and session two, I could say, I can't really differentiate between session two and three.
Are you allowed to smoke? You're allowed to smoke after one. Are you allowed to smoke after two as
no,
well?
No, after two, you're done. After two, you don't want to.
Really?
I think that's when he actually, like, I think two, the difference between the first stage and the second stage is, like, the first stage, he doesn't really instill anything. Like, when you wake up from this, you're not going to be smoking cigarettes anymore. Like, he doesn't say anything like that. He's just, like, educating you, and then he's like, no, you're going to come back, you know, and I'm going to count you out from 10 all the way up to 1, you know, and he counts you up. But he doesn't say, he says, like, you can smoke this week, you know, and then after this, you're going to be done. You know, so, like, you come out of that first state just kind of like, okay. But like I said, I was hesitant to smoke. I really wanted to smoke, but there was something that stuck still in that first, you know, session that made me like, oh man, it is kind of gross. You know,
his success rate? Did he say?
He says everybody does it, but I know, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people have a hard time with it. You know, it's just. You really, and this is what he says, and anybody that I know that's done it too, it's really just kind of like you have to be ready, you know, in a weird way. You just got to be ready. Mm-hmm. And I think that's with anything in life. I mean, they try to make it like this thing, like you just got to be ready. But like that's with anything, marriage, you know, even just dating someone or whether it's a job, you just got to make that choice and just really want it for yourself to really commit, you know? And
right.
And I really... it costs money too. Like you're paying this money. I mean, it's like,
and it's an event.
It's a waste of time, you know. Otherwise, you know, and he's the type of person where even though he's getting paid, he cares. Like,
right.
The dude is passionate. You know, he devotes his whole life to this. This guy, Kerry Gaynor. I'm gonna give you his contact so you can. He has a Twitter page and stuff, and he does this whole thing where
he's gonna get bombed with dick pics right now. They're coming in hot.
Smoke this.
They're coming in hot, bro. Just say his name.
It worked on my sister.
Don't give his Twitter page out. They'll get him.
My sister got hypnotized, and it worked for about a year. And then she said one day she just woke up and it was gone, and she just started smoking again.
Yeah, Kerry Gaynor. Yeah.
Wow. That's what is his Twitter? You want to give it out?
Yeah.
You could if you want.
Yeah, just I'll find it. Because he's a dope dude, man. He's the nicest guy. As soon as I saw him, I knew I wasn't going to have to shank him, but you never know, you know? You never know, Joe Rogan. I mean, not everybody has that bod that you have, dude, where people are just, like, not going to try you.
They'll still try.
it's like session one involved with chloroform.
The tougher the squeeze, the sweeter the juice.
Yeah. His Twitter is Kerry Gaynor. KerryGaynor.
Kerry's one of those weird words that dudes are still allowed to have, you know? But it's a weird one.
He has a Twitter for his
chick's name.
For his business, though.
Why are you naming a dude KerryY? I mean, it is. You can get away with it, but it's strange.
I think it's an Irish thing, though, too.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it could be that. Or it could be a dominant wife who wishes she had a girl.
Well, I promise you that it is not what's going on.
I had a girlfriend in high school, and her mom had a boy's name because the dad wanted a boy. So he named her a boy's name. It was the craziest situation.
No, I've known people like that have had that. Yeah, for sure.
It was ugly, though, because, you know, she didn't get along with her parents. Like, her mom did not get along with her parents. And it's like she always resented that her dad gave her a boy's name. That's creepy, man.
You could just change it.
Yeah, but it was like a love missing thing.
What was
like
the name?
She wasn't, I don't want to say.
Come on.
I don't want to say.
Come on.
Let's make it Mike.
That's not as bad. Because girls, I don't want a girl named Michael.
No, it's my girlfriend. My girlfriend from high school's mom. So I don't think it's appropriate.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Understood. Not, yeah. Understood.
But she was a nice lady, but you could tell she wasn't really into people, especially men.
Yeah, it's always with the weird same too. Name.
Yeah, men with the same name. She had this strange boyfriend for a while. It's very weird when you see like how other people grow up and you see like, oh, that's where that comes from. Like, yeah. You got some weird thing about men, and then you go, okay, let me see what's going on in your house. Oh, look.
Okay, let me see what's going on in your house.
Your mom has a boy's name, and this is her boyfriend, and he's a mess. Okay, yeah, I see how you'd be weird about dudes.
It's science.
It's not your fault. It's like, yeah, you've been doing science in your own house. It's fucked, man. You know, that's the one thing. When everybody judges people, and everybody does love to judge people, the reality is not everybody starts off in the same spot. You know, some people get a shit spot in life.
Yeah.
You know, and then some people, I think a bad spot or an imperfect spot a lot of times motivates them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you feel like that happened with you?
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah.
And I think about it like, and that's what a lot of my issue came through, you know, early on in my career. I had this moment where literally I had like security and a car service everywhere I went, and I just started to feel like Richie fucking Rich. It was just I was like, I got a chaperone. It's like my mom has this person with me everywhere I go to make sure I don't get in trouble, and then like she feeds my bank account as long as I'm good. Like, it just felt really weird, you know. And
and you were on coke.
Yeah. Well, no, then I started to get on coke.
Oh, that's
because it was because, you know, I came
like
from
thing.
Nothing, you know what I'm saying? It
right.
was kind of like, it was hard for me to, like, the way of life was just a different transition, you know?
Yeah, I would imagine. That's got to be that's a big leap. To come from nothing and then become a famous entertainer, as wealthy, is a very treacherous and difficult path to manage, I would imagine.
I think most people's motivation is to, you know, and I can't say I didn't fall victim to it, was to just kind of prove people wrong in a way.
Oh, yeah.
And that was it wasn't anger that fueled me, though. It was just more like, okay, I'll show you.
Well, it's your own desire to determine self-worth.
Right, right. So it wasn't misguided. It was always just like, okay, I'm doubted. The odds are against me, but I know what I'm feeling, and this is what I want.
Did Pink sign your hand, and then you turn it into a tattoo?
No, this is Pink Floyd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I like to feel like early on in my career, I was Pink a bit. You know, building up these walls and kind of like, you know, and I kind of connected with that story early on, and you know, I was, you know, really into Floyd so much that it inspired my sound. Pink Floyd and Electric Light Orchestra really ultimately
ELO, wow, that's
determined
wild.
The soundscapes for my entire career.
Are you just into vinyl? Are you into like listening to it on old vinyl?
I don't collect vinyls. I know buddies that do. I haven't gotten into that. You know, I feel like that is a hobby that I eventually want to get into.
I have not
experienced, you know, a lot of music that I, you know, would love to on vinyl because I just haven't gotten into that.
It's supposed to have a different sound quality to it, right?
Well, I release all my music on vinyl, and you know, all my album covers are designed for vinyl covers. Like, and that's a lot of things that a lot of people don't know that. But, you know, I design all my album covers for vinyl and for that presentation to be able to see the artwork and, you know, have this, you know, and be able to hear it in a certain quality. You know, if you can't play Kid Cudi back in 1960, at least you can kind of get a little taste of it.
Right, you know, and right.
So, like, we mix for vinyl. We do everything for vinyl, ultimately. You know, we're not doing this shit for you know, iTunes and MP3s, you know.
Right.
And there's a ritual,
the sound?
Too.
Yeah, the ritual's big,
just
right?
Getting the vinyl and putting it on there and sitting down. You know, it's a thing.
Well, that thing is rare today. Like, people don't sit down and listen to music together.
Yeah.
Like, if a friend is in a car, I'll play him some shit. Like, listen to this, check this out. Or if we're here in the studio, maybe I got this Bluetooth speaker thing. Yeah. I could hook it up to that. But most of the time, you don't sit down with dudes and just listen to music.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was a kid, my stepfather and his friends, they would put on an album and they would sit down and listen to an album.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it was an experience.
Yeah, like you would get the new, you know, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah,
you know, I remember they had the new Billy Joel album. I was a little kid, man. It was the Piano Man. I remember when it was new. They pulled that shit out. I was probably like 7 or something like that, and they put it on the record player, and everyone just sat around and listened to this Billy Joel album. That's what people did back when there was 2 TV channels.
And I kind of imagine that's what my fans do. And that's kind of like how I create. And a lot of people might not. It's like, that's why, like, when I release a single, for example, it might be some weird shit that people are just like, what is this? But in the context of the story, when you consume the entire album, it makes sense.
Mm.
You know, because I don't really make records for singles. You know, I'm making an entire album here. This is a project. You know?
What percentage of your music is listened to by potheads? Is it like 80?
I think more than that. I think 100%.
He's talking about the moon again.
You tuned it right the fuck in.
Yeah. Right on in there, man.
That's funny, man.
Well, yeah, I think that's what's missing in mainstream music. I think everything is always moment to moment, single to single, who's got who on what record. It's not about, like, sitting down and having an experience, you know, and I'm gonna always create with that in mind. And I think as long as I do that, I'll always have an audience, because there's people, you know, like us, that want that experience, that want that feeling, to get the homies together. And even if we've all heard the album a trillion times, just to put it on from the beginning and let it play.
Yeah,
you know, it's just dope. Man, nobody really does that anymore. Everybody's kind of like Spotify, this here, Pandora, and just skipping around.
Right.
And that's because music is designed that way, you know. But you step into, like, you know, what we do, the kids know. It's like, okay, you buy a Kid Cudi album, you probably have your friends come over. It's a thing. It's like, don't open it till I get there.
Right,
you
know, right,
it's
right.
Like, it's a very big deal, and I love that there's that type of ritual going on, because, like, I do it too. I go and I buy my own album when it comes out, and kids, you know, see me in Best Buy arguing, like, why isn't it in the fucking front? Put it in the front.
Is that,
like,
what you do?
No, I'm not arguing. I'm just doing the shit now. I don't talk to anyone. If it's not in the front,
just move it.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Hell yeah. Wow. Dude. Hell yeah.
Is that legal?
No, but I do it.
I think that's digital terrorism or something.
You know, but it's kind of like I look at it like this. If I'm not going out on a day I'm buying my album, you can't expect other people to do it. You know, if I got to support my own self too. You know,
that's hilarious. You're supporting your own self. That doesn't even work that way. Just keep the money in your pocket and steal your own album.
Well,
that's what you should do.
I really do believe
that way. You really truly support yourself.
Or get caught shoplifting your album at Best Buy, so everyone reports it.
There you go. That's a big story on TMZ.
Yeah.
That's like. You would be a front page guy.
I'd be an idiot. But you know, like, I really do believe that, man. I believe it's just like, you
that's
know, if
good.
You, if you're selling some merch, you gotta, you know, promote your merch. Kids gotta see you wearing your own stuff. It's you gotta let them know, like, hey, I'm down with this shit too.
Look at Brian. He's covered in his own merch. The kid never wears anything but Death Squad T-shirts and Death Squad hats.
I have to make my own clothes
proper
now.
Business
Death Squad TV.
Proper
he's
business.
He's gonna make his own Crocs. Death Squad Crocs. He's gonna walk around them. He's gonna become that guy.
I want a pair of those
blue Crocs with white socks that have Death Squad kitties on them. Would you ever wear Crocs outside?
It's so weird that you said that, Jeb. I went to the Magic Castle last night.
And you were wearing Crocs?
No, I had to buy new shoes because I don't have dress shoes.
You're a member up there.
Huh?
No.
No, I got invited.
Ah, lucky bastard.
Would you really want to go to that?
Just to see what's up.
Yeah.
I just drive by it every damn day. I want to know what's going on.
That'd be easy. I can get you.
You're going to go? Okay.
But I had to get dress shoes, and I was joking with my girlfriend that I was just going to buy black Crocs so I could use them other times than just dressing up. And she thought I wore them the whole time because I had an old pair of Crocs. And I was like, these are what I bought. And she's like, are you sure you're not wearing those? And then right before I left, I switched on. But we had this whole Croc thing last night.
That's Crocs. Hilarious.
No, those Crocs are great.
Do you own Crocs, Joe?
No. No.
No. No.
But, I mean, I don't have any problem with wearing them. I would wear them if they were that comfortable.
Yeah. I heard they're good.
Yeah, that's what I keep
hearing.
I
don't own any, but I heard they're good.
It's my walk outside and get the mail or do something else. But
I usually wear either skate shoes or wear Converse. Like All-Stars. Yeah. That's where I wear. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. See, I got these leather chucks on.
Nice.
They're comfortable.
I got these Bapes today.
Kapow! Oh, those are nice. What are those?
Bathing Ape.
Ooh,
a couple years, maybe like 5 years old, these came out.
I like that. I like the star on the side.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope. Skate shoes are probably the most comfortable. Like them and like Chuck Taylors. Those are all like pretty much.
I used to only wear Vans, and then my girl got me into wearing Jordans and stuff like that. They're built. I get it now. They are the most comfortable shoe in the world.
Welcome to the dark
finally
side.
Finally,
you've got Jordans.
Are you going to be one of those dudes like on MTV Cribs where you go into your house, you got all these Jordans like stacked up around your place?
Look at these shoes right here.
Oh, nice. Look at you.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch.
Those
look at
are
that.
My mags.
Back to the Future shoes.
Those are giant.
Those are from Back to the Future.
Is that what they're from?
Yeah, those are the mags, the Nike mags.
Are those comfortable?
Yeah, they are, man. They designed the shit out of those.
Yeah. Joe, have you ever wear a pair of Jordans or any of those kind of shoes?
I haven't in a long time. When I used to have a deal with Nike, I used to have one of those things where, like, when I was on news radio, they'd give you free shoes. And on Fear Factor, too. They'd just send me boxes of free Nikes.
Wow.
But I just stopped. I don't really do TV anymore. It'd be rude if I kept calling them.
Yeah. Like, yo, so, you know, I still need that shit.
Yeah, they're like, what are you going to do with this? It's going to work out and your shit.
Yeah.
But they had a thing where you could call them and they would give you free
stuff.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. But so they would give me a bunch of stuff that I wouldn't wear, like white and red, like basketball shoes. I'd be like, I don't think I can wear these. But a lot of like cross trainers and shit. They have comfortable shit. But I got into like smaller sole things that have like less, you feel the ground more.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
Chucks, like yeah. Chuck Taylors. I like that better.
I can't perform in Jordans, you know, and that's
really?
Something I discovered recently.
Really?
Know?
In what way?
I just can't move.
In bed?
I can't
on
be
stage?
As,
imagine that. If you're like,
on stage.
I need combat boots. I fuck with army boots on only. With a cigar hanging out of your mouth like fucking Sergeant Fury.
That's ridiculous.
Or how about Timberlands?
Man, I mean, I've seen people do it in all sorts of you know footwear, but for me, I'm moving around a lot, and it's hard for me to move as quick and as nimble.
Why is that with Jordans? I would feel they were athletic shoes.
Well, I'm not like. Well, first off, I'm not like I don't have them laced up.
Oh. Okay.
You know, like I'm about to go play full court. Right. You know what I mean? So there's that. There's the.
So they're slipping around.
Yeah, that's the whole, like, you know, trying to be fresh thing about it. So they're not, like, really being worn how they're supposed to be worn. But then, like, there's nothing like Converse where it feels like you're literally dancing barefoot.
Yeah.
Like on your tippy toes from one end to the stage to the other. And that's literally, I find, like, the best sneaker for me. On stage.
Yeah, Converse are the best for working out, too. Like, if you're lifting weights and stuff, you just feel the ground with them. There's there's very little padding. But it makes you think, like, those dudes like Julius Erving, like, back in the day where they used to wear those and actually play basketball games in them, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they wore. Chuck Taylors. They would play a fucking basketball game with no protection, basically. Yeah. You know?
Ankles were getting broken.
Bro. Oh, they probably snapped. But then again, they probably developed tougher ankles, you know? Like, they grew up doing that.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Jamie shakes his head. He's a fucking physiologist.
Muscular ankles, man. I'm there.
Yeah. I think. Well, doesn't it make sense that, like, if you used it, it would get stronger? No? Like if you put too much bracing around it, wouldn't...
Can I tap on this?
Go ahead. Yeah, I would imagine. There's a lighter right there.
Thank you.
There's some more of these, too.
Thank you.
Joe's Hello Kitty
am
lighter.
Am I on camera?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Make sure he's on camera. We don't want the world to know he smokes weed. So we got in touch because you reached out to me on Twitter out of nowhere.
What? Oh, yeah.
That was cool.
We was on Twitter talking shit.
Yeah.
I love what you do, Joe. I'm a big fan. I'm sorry. You don't mind us.
No, please.
Okay. Hello, everybody.
Hello, America.
This is like what everybody wants to see, right? This is what you guys want to see.
No, they want to see you shoot heroin. Do bumps.
there's a bunch of bumps.
And the other one, Brian, is a bunch. There's a bunch in that one. Yeah, do some bumps, dog. Yeah, I just grab one of
these. I'll tell you what, Joe. When I get married, I'm going to invite you to my wedding. Me and you going to do some bumps.
No, I've never done coke. I've never done coke.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think I'm ever going to get married. So,
oh,
like,
beautiful.
This works out for
I remember saying that, too. They get you.
Man, I want to be gotten, Joe. I want to be gotten, bro.
It's definitely better than wanting to be gotten. Being gotten is better than wanting to be gotten.
Yeah, man. I'm joking, like, by the way. No, I'm just dicking around. Everybody wants love. It's the truth.
Oh, for sure, dude. It's one of the weirdest things when you know somebody who just can't ever fucking get it right. They can't find somebody they care about. Like, everybody knows this one girl or one dude that just can't get a girlfriend or a boyfriend. There's always, like, the struggle. They're always single. They can't find anybody worth the fuck. That's sad shit. That's
what, they can't find anyone to fuck? Or
no,
just worth a fuck?
Fuck.
Okay, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Almost everybody,
well, that's
if
me.
You lower your standards enough, can find somebody that'll fuck you. That's you?
No, I mean, I'm not saying that I meet people that aren't worth a fuck, but it is hard to find somebody, you know, and it's no different whether you're a celebrity or not, you know, it's just hard to meet people, and you don't...
It's hard to really...
I guess, trust and believe you know someone. I mean, how well do you ever really know someone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, how long does it take to say that you really know someone? How do you know what somebody is giving you is really them? You know?
It's true. I mean, there's definitely people that will bullshit you, and there's definitely people that have layers to their personality that you didn't imagine.
Yeah.
You know, you just get to, especially if you cross them, if you develop some sort of a feud with them, and you find out that they're willing to just go completely psycho on you and take shit to the next level and start banging on your fucking door in the middle of the night, screaming, "Get that hoe out of there!" You know, this is just,
well, that's me. I
that's what you do. That's your move.
I'm totally
certain people.
That girl.
Can
I mean, that guy.
Mentally insane in the course of a relationship. Right.
But no, I feel you, man. I like to keep a stance where it's like, well, fuck that, you know, I don't need anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But deep down, like, everybody wants somebody that's like a companion, you know, and it's somebody that's a best friend and a teammate. And I kind of, you know, will always want that. But it's not something that I'm like searching for like I used to. Like, it was for a while, it was like I felt like that was the only way I can get a certain happiness in my life, you know?
Right.
And just come to terms with it, and you realize that that's not the way. And, you know, I'm just very hopeful, you know, that I'll run into somebody, but it is tough, you know? And I meet a lot of cool chicks, you know? I meet a lot of cool chicks, and, you know, it's just, for me, it's just really just, it's tough about being at the right place at the right time when you know.
Sometimes you're not in the right place in your own head too, and
right,
you wouldn't be
saying.
A good person to be in a relationship with.
Yeah, and that's you know? And I really do. I feel like, you know, at this time in my life, you know, there's a lot of soul searching that Scott needs to do.
Scott's talking about himself in the third person.
In
now?
Third person, yeah,
Scott.
Yeah. Because
AKA
I didn't want to admit that, you know. So when I have to admit shit like that, you know, flaws and all, I have to step out.
Right,
like,
Scott needs to get his shit together.
Yeah, it never means like I have to get my shit together. It's, it sounds so much worse.
Yeah, but Jefferson Starship, man, they said it back in the '60s. Don't you want somebody to love?
Oh yeah.
Don't you need somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love?
Yeah, yeah.
You better find somebody to love.
Yeah, and
that bitch could sing.
I really feel like, you know. Well, I actually want to ask before I go into this. How did you meet your lady? Like, was it just like? Because everybody says like it happens when you least expect it. Like, was it at a
pumpkin
patch?
I don't like to get too into my personal life on podcasts because I think people fixate on other people's personal lives too much.
Okay,
and it gets weird when people start talking to you in public about your personal life and you don't even know them.
Okay,
so I just found there's no benefit in doing that.
Right,
but. I just met her in a normal environment. I met her in a bar. You can meet people. It's like, where do you go? Well, if you go there, like people say, oh, you never meet somebody in a bar, or you never meet somebody in a bowling alley. Do you go to a bowling alley? Yes. Okay, well, then you could meet somebody in a bowling alley.
Yeah.
You know, people vary. It's just finding them. And that's what's, it's not that easy. Finding the right combination of you and them. And you might be terrible to other people. Like, other people might think, like, the last thing I want is this crazy Scott motherfucker in my life.
Yeah.
But then
there's
you might
some chicks
be,
right now that feel that way.
I'm sure. It's, of course.
Sorry, girls.
We're not all compatible with each other. And everybody wants to take that as a sign of rejection or a sign of, you know, your own lack of self-worth or something like that. But it's not that. Somewhere out there, there's someone who enjoys your personality.
Yeah.
If you're honest and you're nice, like, if you're honest with yourself, you understand your flaws, whatever you're trying to do in this life, try to do it well. If you got, you know, you got a lot of positive energy about you, you could probably find somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got to be worth finding.
Yeah, I got to get out the house, Joe.
Got to get out the house.
That's step one.
Step two?
I play a lot of Xbox, so that's my thing. And whenever you want to come over,
you can either go deep, or you could get out of the house,
no.
Or you could just go Oculus Rift and live your whole life through the net. That's like coming, man.
Yeah,
that's on its
just
way.
Have a me character I date in this other realm. That's kind of like her, like, you know, and it's just my babe in this world.
She's hot as fuck, and then when you're done banging her, you pull her mask off, and it's you. You're like, what the hell is that?
Well, the thing is, you can always power down. It's not like something you got to deal with all the time, you know?
Maybe they get you like a hypnotist. Just climb inside your head.
I want the world to know that, like, I'm part-time a comedian when I want to. So this is a lot of sarcasm, so just bear with us here.
You
can kind of, like, you know, decipher most of it.
Yeah, you don't want them taking any of your quotes in text.
Yeah, because I come from a world where anything that come out my mouth is taken so literally. So it's like, I want to make sure that we understand we're dicking around here and
exactly.
Having fun. You know, and that's why I came here today, because I don't do interviews and I don't sit down and talk to anybody. My fans know, because this shit's weird. You know, people aren't cool, you know? Not everybody's as cool as Joe Rogan, bro. You know? So, like, big fan, like I said, and I know you talk about psychedelics, and I saw something you were talking about one time where you were talking about how you went into one of those chambers,
isolation tank.
Yeah, and
was it a video?
I think no, I didn't. It wasn't a video.
Brian made a video about it when I gave away my tank. It was like one of your best videos.
Oh, you own one, bro?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I own one now, but I had another one, my old one, and I gave it away online. So we had this. Thing.
Where do you get them?
Well, you could buy them online.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, where you can order. There's a bunch of different companies. But, well, we'll talk afterwards because I'll ask you where you live.
Okay.
And then I'll tell you your best option. But the place that you want to visit, there's a place called the Float Lab. And it's in Venice. And the guy who runs it is my friend Crash. He's actually been on the podcast before. And he's the master when it comes to float tank technology. He's the guy that really changed the entire industry. Because it used to be like kind of home models that were like kind of flimsy and, you know, they would have all sorts of issues. He fixed all the issues, changed all the filtration system, made them much more durable, much bigger, better insulation. Like,
oh,
he's
wow.
turned them into these incredible, like, complete next level devices.
Oh wow.
And that's in California. So the best place is in California.
Okay.
There's another place that's in Austin that is probably right up there. And that place, fuck, I forget the name of it. I got it on my Instagram feed.
With all this, man. I need all this information.
Do you live in California?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, if you live in California, then there's one place to go. That's the Float Lab.
Here's, if you look at the video, here's Joe's isolation tank he had at his house. This is his old one.
The Amazon Indians, and he brought it back to
I'm talking about the movie Altered States, which is where I found out about isolation tank.
You look pretty young there, Joe.
It's like 11 or 12 years ago.
Ozone returns back into the box after a double filter. And on top of that, I also have this right here, which is an oxygen scrubber, just like they have at those oxygen bars. Well, this little machine right here pulls oxygen, pure oxygen, out of the air, and it pumps it through this tube. And this tube gets pumped into the tank while I'm lying in it. So I get pure oxygen, which is amazing for your mind anyway. It makes you feel very refreshed. And then on top of that, I'm in this weightless, bodiless experience where it's you and your thoughts. Usually my experience, it takes the first 15, 20 minutes is always just me thinking about my life, me thinking about my friendships, my relationships.
What the fuck? Are you underwater?
No, you float.
So you just
there's so much salt in the water that when you lie in it, you just float.
Right.
So you're like half your body's above the water, right, like this much, and everything behind it is underwater. So like your ears are underwater. So you can either wear earplugs if you want. I don't usually wear earplugs. I just get in. But some people like earplugs.
Right.
You can just rinse your ears out.
And what happens?
You float, and you're in total silence.
What's the experience?
Total darkness.
Oh, just total darkness.
It varies. You feel like you're flying through space. Like, I recently got Graham Hancock into it. He just did a couple of them, and that's his description of it. He said it feels like you're in space. You're flying because you're weightless. And as you're lying there, like, floating, that never happens in life, where you don't feel like there's anything holding you down.
Yeah.
You feel like you're flying through space.
Yeah.
And because the fact that you're in this tank with no light coming in and no sound, you have no, like, your brain doesn't have any work to do. Doesn't have to worry about your balance. Doesn't have to worry about moving you around or dealing with your environment in any way. Nothing's coming in.
Yeah.
So this tank was created by this guy who's a pioneer in interspecies communications with dolphins. He's this really crazy guy called John Lilly. And he did all these, like, really important studies with dolphins, like trying to teach dolphins human words and trying to communicate with them. But their noises are so much different than ours. But he did a lot of it while he's on acid. He was trying to develop a bunch of ways to get outside of the influence of the body. Like, he was being very scientific about it. And his ideas were, he used to have like a scuba tank that was like you had a helmet on, like one of those 25,000 leagues under the sea type helmets.
Yeah, what I'm thinking. Like, at first when you were talking about it, I was like, the fuck?
That's what he used to have. And he used to have it where it was like hooked up, where it was on a harness, and you would be sort of just dunked in the water. So eventually you'd forget about the helmet, you'd forget about your body, you just chill out and relax, and the water was the same temperature as your skin. So it becomes indistinguishable after a while once he's got it dialed in just right. You don't want it too hot because then you can sweat. You don't want it too cool or you're cold in there and start shivering. It's a Goldilocks 93.5 degrees. It's like 93.5. Some people it's 94.
Yeah.
So you should do it, man. It's amazing.
You say you got it at your crib?
Yeah, I have one.
Could I come over and try it?
Sure. Absolutely.
I would love to.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you wanted to get one for your house, too, Crash definitely sells those.
Okay.
I feel like it's something that should be in every university. It's something that should be in just a lot of people should, if they have the money or they have the time or the group of people get together and invest in it, it's so beneficial. And it's something that's just, it's not thought of as being an important, like, tool in your life.
Yeah.
But the ability to tune the whole world out and just float.
That's awesome.
Oh, you trip your balls off.
But how do you
too.
Get in and out of it? Like, somebody has to
no,
help
no, no,
you.
No, it's real easy. It's real easy. It's only 11 inches of water.
Okay.
So as you're lying there, I mean, you just stand up when you're done.
Okay.
And you just get out. It's nothing. I mean, you can't drown. The water's 11 inches, and it's only 6 feet wide. You touch the sides with your hands. You know, you center yourself in the middle and relax. And when you do it, you get more and more comfortable every time you do it. The first time you do it, it'll be a little weird. Like, everybody's described it pretty much says what I always have said. Like, the first couple of times, it's just, like, about getting to relax, figuring out how to relax. But once you've done it, like, a few dozen times, then it just becomes that thing you do. You just get in there, and you just, But for me, it's giant. Whenever there's any issues that I'm dealing with, any problems that I have, maybe creatively even. Mm. You know, I like to go in there. I'll go in there with jiu-jitsu problems. I'll go in there with try to analyze someone's movements. Like if there's a guy who like keeps catching me with a particular submission, I would go in the tank and I would try to work out like the defense for the submission in the tank.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I would go with like a specific goal in mind because it makes your brain like supercharged.
Yeah.
Because we don't. Like when I'm sitting here, I got a super uncomfortable chair. This is this thing called a saddle chair, a Sally's swing something chair.
Holy shit.
It's super uncomfortable, but it's really good for your back.
Okay.
It makes you sit. It makes you sit like an arrow, yeah. You know? But it's stupid uncomfortable, man. What was my point?
No, you were saying that like...
I completely lost my point. I picked up to show the fucking chair. What was I saying just before that? None of you guys know.
I was listening.
Three people in this room. That's a sure sign.
You offered me weed. You gave me a joint.
That's a sure sign. Whatever I was saying was very ineffective because no one remembers it at all.
I was following.
Yeah, short term memories, motherfucker, man.
Yeah, what were you talking about?
I don't know. Oh, we're talking about sensory deprivation because this gives me a lot of sensory input. It's uncomfortable. It's like pinching my dick. You got to squeeze your legs together to sit up.
Yeah.
And when you're sitting in it, you're constantly kind of working out your legs. Like you're pinching your legs together as you sit here.
Oh, that's the only way you can sit up is if you squeeze
exactly.
your legs.
That's the key to it. The key to it is it's uncomfortable. And when you do sit like that, it activates your core and it's actually good for your back. And it makes my back feel great. It's amazing. Like, I do a 3-hour podcast, my back doesn't fuck with me at all. Whereas if I sit in a regular chair, after like 3 hours, I feel like tight, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like kinked up. This doesn't do that at all.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of sensory input. I think when you're dealing with, like, there's a keyboard in front of you, or you see that light, you see this clock, you see all these different things, you're taking in your entire environment, you're feeling the gravity of your body pulling into the chair. There's all these things that your brain is calculating. And if there was some people next to you that were screaming and yelling, it would be really hard to pay attention to what you're saying. Like, sometimes we do these podcasts and they'll like be unloading trucks, and we'll hear the trucks in the background. Bang, bang, bang. You know, we'll hear the hydraulics and the engines and shit, and it's distracting. It makes you wish that it would go away, because then you'd be able to formulate your thoughts without any resistance, with less resistance.
Right.
But when you're in that tank, that is that's that state at its best. Because there's nothing coming in. There's nothing coming in. It's just your mind. There's nothing coming in. And when you get to that place where there's nothing coming in, it's beautiful. You get a real chance to like go over shit. Creative stuff or personal stuff or, you know, problems. Like if you play a game, if there's anything that you do where you're constantly working at it, like some guys play golf or some guys, you can get in that tank and just think about all the various things, the various aspects of anything you're trying to concentrate on.
Yeah.
And it offers you this window of concentration that's just unavailable any other way.
Yeah. I feel you. I mean, I definitely need to try it. Because I've heard a lot about it, but never really knew what it was, and I didn't really know how you would go about doing it.
Super easy.
That's another thing, too. It's like, who do you ask? You know, and that's with anything. Like,
well, right now, there's less of them than there should be. There should be all over the place, and people are starting to open up these tank centers.
It could be a business. Yeah, I was about to say, it could be a place where you just go, like
a
spa.
Well, they have them. They have them. There's a bunch of them that are popping up.
Or in California?
There's a couple of them in California, but only a couple. But I know that the guys who run On the Mat were thinking about starting one. And I know that Crash is opening up a bigger one in Westwood. It's just very under, as far as like the amount of demand, it's very underutilized. That demand is under tapped into. Because I think a lot of people would like it.
And Burbank one's still there, I think.
Yep, Soothing Solutions, which is in Burbank, which is where I first went in like 2002. And I got hooked immediately. Like I couldn't imagine that this is something that so few people were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, you got to try it.
Yeah.
You got to try it.
And you were actually the first person. I might have heard about it in another conversation or two, but you were the first person I heard talk about it extensively in detail. And it wasn't this video. I heard you talking about it on your podcast.
Yeah, I won't shut the fuck up about it. And people get mad.
Well, you have one. I mean,
yeah,
it's like...
it's not just that. I'm telling you, if you haven't tried it, you don't know. I'm telling you for your own good. If Let's I'm beating a dead horse, I apologize. But
you're just one of the lucky sons of bitches that has one in his house.
Well, look, there's a lot of people that do renovations to their house. They do all these different things. They spend a lot of money, and that doesn't even come into the realm of possibility. Like, we got to get a hot tub. That's there. People love to get hot tubs. Oh, Mike and Sue got a new hot tub. Let's come on over. We'll go sit in the jacuzzi. Oh, nice. What does this run you? It's about $5,000? Well, a little more, Bob. And they have these fucking stupid conversations. But if one of them said, hey, man, I'm thinking about getting an isolation tank, which is like, you could get one for less than that. Like, there's a, I think a company called Zen Float, they make one that's like really inexpensive. I think it's like $1,700. Wow. It's like the least expensive one. It's not the same as like crashes, not even close. Yeah. It's flimsy, but it'll work, you know? It's, I don't know how it deadens the sound anyway, but I guess being underwater deadens the sound. You know, maybe it works great. Maybe it's enough.
I'm looking
it's definitely better than nothing. That's for sure.
The kids are talking about us on Twitter. I love it.
Don't pay attention to that shit.
No, it's great. It's great. It's a live
feed. Being mean to you, so you pay attention to them.
No, they love it.
Of course they do.
They love us, bro.
This will fuck you up, though. You can't be doing that while you're doing a podcast. We never get to talking. We'll be doing no talking.
Just I was be like, we've been on here kicking it. I wonder how they feel right now.
You can't worry about that shit, man. You can't trust them. Can't trust them with your thoughts. Dawn of the Dead. You got a Dawn of the Dead shirt.
Yeah, man.
That's a dope fucking horror movie. That was scary as shit.
Oh, yeah.
When that movie came out and they were going through the mall, when the zombies were wandering through the mall.
Yeah, yeah.
The people don't know. All these people today that are so spoiled because we've had about a billion fucking zombie movies. Back then, when Dawn of the Dead was around, when that movie first came out, that was a game changer. It made people shit their pants.
And I think that's like, you know, and I'm a big Walking Dead fan. Are you a Walking Dead fan?
Yeah.
So like, you know, like Greg Nicotero, who's just like, you know, special effects legend, you know, did a lot of the earlier special effects in these movies, you know, and just to see Walking Dead and see like just how they use real practical effects and all the gore is just so real looking.
Yeah.
It's so sick, man. I'm just a horror movie fanatic, man. I've just been obsessed with horror since I was a kid.
Me too. The only thing that bugs me about The Walking Dead is uniformity of their slasher sounds.
What do you mean?
When they're cutting somebody up, when they're killing people and stuff, you know, where they're hacking up zombies, the sounds are all the same. You know what I'm saying? It's like there's not a lot of variety in the sounds they make when they cut open their heads.
Man, they get gruesome.
It's always like, it's always the same. You know what I mean?
No. It's like the cat sound every time somebody throws something out the window. It's always the exact same, like, meow.
It's always like super exaggerated, too. I would just like a little realism. Like, sometimes when you hit someone in the head with a bat, it doesn't make the best sound. Like, sometimes you just graze them, and it doesn't have that same every time. It's like it's...
You got a bat. You the bat specialist, you know, you just know.
Well, I've seen a lot of zombie movies, bro. I know. If done correctly, it makes a different sound. Like, the best was 28 Days Later. In my opinion, that's the best zombie movie of all time.
Shaun of the
Dead.
Did
you see the second one?
Shaun of the Dead was fun. That was really fun.
The sequel was good, too,
though. The sequel was great. 28 Weeks Later, great, too. Yeah. Look, there was a difference in that those zombies were scary as fuck. They ran at you.
Yeah.
And they could bite you, and if it got in you, you would instantly turn. You know? There was some... wild scenes. That scene, spoiler alert, where that chick chops her boyfriend up with the machete. He got bit, and she goes, "Let me see your arm." And she looks at him, and he goes, "No." And she just starts hacking at him with the machete.
Yeah.
That is dark.
It's real life.
Fuck yeah, it is.
It's real life, Joe Rogan.
That's real life zombie life. It's not real life. It's a movie.
Well, no, it's in my eyes, it's real life, Joe.
Yeah, man, that was a fucking great movie, man. That was a great horror movie. So you're into like the special effects guys and everything. You know who they are.
I'm into like, you know, art, and I look at that as an art form. You know? That's how those guys do it. It's sick. It takes a certain level of expertise and taste, and you know, I'm just a fan of it. Anybody that can do a horror movie with no CGI, I mean, bravo. And then it still be funny and believable. It's like, or a TV show or anything. It's you know, not easy. You know.
Oh, it's really hard.
Yeah.
These guys like Pat McGee is the guy who did The Werewolf Out There, which is the copy
that
of the Rick
me out
Baker.
When I walked in, I was like, okay, I know I'm in the right place.
The Rick Baker werewolf from American Werewolf in London. Yeah. And one of the beautiful things about that movie was that there was no CGI. It was all Rick Baker's creation. And they had to show it to you in these little flashes. They couldn't just show you so much of it like they do today.
Yeah.
Like now, the monsters look way better, for sure. But they're showing you too much.
Yeah.
So in showing you too much, it actually looks shittier. Like, there's a lot of monster movies where, like, one of the weird things about monsters, like a real monster movie, is you see them so briefly before they kill you. You know, it's like, oh, Jesus, and then you're dead. Like, and they sort of represented that in American Werewolf in London. Yeah. Like, you saw that thing for, like, a frame, two frames.
Yeah.
And you were shitting your pants. The guy was running through the subway, and there's a brief, like, couple frames where the werewolf's at the bottom of the escalator, and it's down there, and he's traveling up, and he sees the werewolf starting to make its way up the escalator, and he's shitting his pants. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a couple seconds, and it's gone. And it's like, God damn, it's so much better than showing people like a CGI, like those movies that are kind of fun, Underworld, those kind of Underworld movies, but the werewolf is the hour of screen time. Yeah. As a werewolf, you get used to seeing it. It's not scary anymore.
It's like, you know, if you can tease the audience and build up that anticipation, it's like, you know, I mean, because you can, you know, do the CGI and make the, you know, the monster look more present in the scene, you know, it's kind of like, people aren't thinking about it. They give it to them in doses.
Yeah.
Some movies have done it, you know, dope. Like, I liked Cloverfield. I thought that was sick.
That was great. That,
you know, the new Godzilla I thought was dope. I wasn't mad at it.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
The dude who kept surviving bummed me out a little bit. I was just like, this motherfucker has the worst luck, yet the best luck ever. He keeps getting these cataclysmic situations that keeps getting out with a Band-Aid. Everybody else is dead. This fucking dude rises from every ash, brushes himself off. We got to fight Godzilla. He's not freaking the fuck out that a bridge just missed his head. No, he's like, we got to get Godzilla. Got to save my family and get Godzilla.
Still haven't seen it.
Oh, my God. It's worth seeing just for the end scene. Just for the fight scene between Godzilla and the other monster.
Yeah.
That's pretty dope.
I wasn't expecting that.
That was pretty dope.
And then it reminds you that, like, Godzilla is really about Godzilla.
Well, Godzilla is a hero movie.
Yeah.
It's like, Godzilla is a hero. Godzilla is a hero. So is King Kong. Those are hero movies. Like, you can't, they're not scary movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a monster movie. Like, King Kong, you only see him in brief seconds. It wouldn't work. Like, that's one of the main problems with, like, special effects and a movie like King Kong. It's like, it always had to be special effects. Yeah. From the 1930 movie. Like, you got to see him all the time.
Yeah.
It's not like this monster you briefly see for a second and then it gets you, oh, like the original Alien.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, but that's the shit that, I mean, Aliens is always going to be a classic.
The original one was the best because you barely saw it.
I think they all were kind of like that, though, because in the environments that they were at, it was just so fucking shady, like, you know, in the spaceships and...
Well, the second one was pretty fucking dope. That was the James Cameron one, Aliens. Mm. But it was different than the first one, because the first one, you barely saw that fucking thing.
Yeah.
You barely saw it.
Yeah.
It was always and by the time they saw it, it would be on them, and it would kill them, and that would be it.
Yeah.
And then the second one, they're everywhere, and they're just shooting them and killing them. Like, they kill them so much easier.
Yeah.
The first one, it was like this super intelligent thing that was sneaking up on you.
Yeah.
It was like some super genius alien. And the second one, it was like this trailer park aliens. And there was a million of them. And they were all idiots. They were all idiots. Like, the first alien was brilliant. It was so clever and sneaky. And it knew where people were going. And it would ambush them. It would hide. And then the second movie, they were all dumb. They were just jacking them. They would just run into a room and kill four or five of them.
The third one was my favorite.
Really?
With Rock in it.
Charles Dutton. He's a nice guy, man. I met that dude once. I was on a TV show with him, like one of those talk show type things, back when he was doing that show. He was cool as fuck.
Yeah, he seems cool.
Very friendly.
But he was a badass in that movie. He was the only person I ever seen in that whole franchise go toe-to-toe.
Oh, that's right.
Go toe-to-toe.
Wasn't Winona Ryder in that one, too? Or was she in the fourth one? How many of them are there?
And I know the third one was, he was in the third one, right? Am I right?
I think so.
Because that was the one she killed herself.
Right.
She had the baby.
She had the baby
and she fell into the lava, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Damn, she wanted to kill the baby.
Yeah. And that was the one, where he was down there about to square up with the dude because he ran out of ammo.
Yeah.
And was like, is that all you got? And was like fighting him.
Yeah, that's right.
So fucking G.
Yeah. That didn't end well, though, for him.
Yeah, but you know, we don't make it in these movies like that. We don't make it. But he is probably, like, in a horror movie. Or, well, I wouldn't even call that a horror movie. It was like more like a sci-fi, you know, thriller.
The first one was a horror movie.
Yeah, but by the third one, it was just more like a...
Yeah.
It didn't come off more... It was more like action than sci-fi. But that was the only time I've ever seen in that franchise, if we dare call it a horror, where, you know... you know, the black character goes out in such a way where it's like, you know, fuck that, you know, going out swinging, like, to some shit like that, come on. Like an alien, like, dude, like, come on, Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
You would not square up with no alien like that.
Yeah,
who would
goes,
you do?
You just, like, just what shit your pants.
Yeah, exactly.
And let it eat you.
Exactly.
It's going to eat you.
It's happening.
Yeah.
This is happening.
It's like if a puppy talks shit to you, you're like, what? That's what it's like. It's like, you know, that's what the alien is like with a person.
Yeah, yeah. Truth be told, yeah.
Yeah, and then it became aliens versus predators. Like, what the fuck did you do? It's a slow degradation from, like, one of the greatest horror movies of all time, a Ridley Scott masterpiece,
yeah,
to, like, this preposterous, just action fun film. I mean, they're fun.
I didn't watch that, though.
I watched Alien versus one of them. One of them, I remember,
was, oh, there was
in the
more
middle.
Than, there was more than one?
Oh, there's like 1,000 of them. I didn't
no,
make fucking churn them
fuck
out every
that.
Year.
No.
How many Aliens versus Predators?
No.
If I had a guess, let me guess. I want to say there's 3 or 4.
Show me a
Alien
wiki.
Versus Predators.
This. I don't believe this. I remember there was one.
There's only 2? Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. I'm not buying that.
Maybe there was a TV show?
No, no, there was movies, man.
There's a, what was also
it's like Transformers. How many Transformers movies were there?
3. What? Well, 3. 4 if you count the cartoon.
3, yeah. No, 4.
4. You got that touch.
Isn't there a new one that's coming out or something?
What's Alien?
No, that's the one that just came out.
That already came out? The Marky Mark one?
Yeah.
That's been and gone already?
Yeah.
Not so good?
Wait, no, man.
You got to bring back Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, he's crazy, but he knows how to fucking sell the shit out of some
robots.
How many
Transformers are there, though?
There's the original one.
Movies.
The new ones.
Yeah.
The action ones, there's 3.
Okay, all right. There was one that just came out with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, that's the 3rd one.
How many Aliens versus Predators is it? Just 2?
Yeah. 2, it looks like.
Wow. I would have assumed there was more.
Man, I mean...
What was Alien Resurrection?
I didn't know they made
a- that was the one. That was 4.
That was when
they took
back.
Her DNA.
Yeah, she came back.
And they cloned her.
Yeah.
They somehow or another got her DNA. They cloned her, and that was weird.
It's like, how's this happening? Sigourney Weaver's just back.
And then there was the Prometheus movie, which was weird as fuck too. I wonder if they're gonna do another one.
I think so. Oh yeah.
Prometheus could have been. I don't know, man. It's hard. Like we said, like the idea of putting together a movie. Just the idea of getting all those people together. I enjoyed Prometheus. I mean, it wasn't the perfect sci-fi movie. It wasn't as good as the original one, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And I love the idea behind it. The idea of, like, that's how he introduces his DNA into the new virgin planet by taking some horrible poison that breaks him down and he dies, falls into the water, and then slowly but surely a natural course of evolution grows out of his DNA, and that's how people are created. That's fascinating to me.
I mean, it was. I mean, I ain't never seen no shit like that. So I entertained it. I enjoyed it.
Well, I think that Ridley Scott is brilliant, and I think he's probably been thinking about this for a long time before he created this. And I don't know who wrote the screenplay, but I would imagine all of them have been thinking about this for a long time. Like, if you were gonna like the right way to introduce life into another planet, it'd be like just get a planet that doesn't have any life. And you just inject something, you know, and if it's a body, especially that breaks down, that body has also got all sorts of bacteria and weird shit on it, and that's going to come out when it dies, and the bacteria starts eating its flesh, and will they be able to transmit and go to plants or other plant matter that's on this planet? Is there some primitive life that it can cling to and morph with some sort of a virus? Like diseases change people. You know, diseases can probably change all sorts of other things. Viruses and bacteria slowly mutate and morph out of this one body. That comes. I mean, how far can a body go? If a body rotted, if there was a planet, and that this planet had no biological life, and you brought a body, and you just threw it there, all it had is plant life. Is it possible that could somehow or another have enough fuel from eating that body and figuring out how to subside off plants, that they would figure out some sort of a way to become a viable life form on a planet? Is that outside the realm of possibility?
Yeah.
Is that stoner talk? Is it?
I mean,
I don't know. I mean, how?
I don't think it's too crazy.
You mean?
I think.
And then if some other dude landed on that same planet and then got sick from this bacteria that was created by the body that was left behind before, and then he takes it back to his planet, and everybody gets fucked up and they all die. And then the planet where the bacteria was, that bacteria has figured out how to form a civilization and has Wi-Fi, and they've spread out and become people.
And they call themselves humans.
Yeah, if you get too high, you can think some really stupid shit, and you can talk about it on a podcast like I just did. But everybody's fascinated by that subject of aliens, the idea of aliens creating people.
Yeah.
Like a movie like Prometheus.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, it's entertaining to kind of play with that idea, you know, for a minute.
Yeah. It's entertaining to think that someone's going to come visit, too.
Yeah. I mean, everybody loves aliens.
Yeah, I mean, you would even...
Except predators.
If you lived on an island...
They don't fuck with aliens at all.
If you lived on an island somewhere and you're by yourself, just out there, just you sitting around, maybe you got a dog, you're sitting on this island, you got plenty of food, but you're bored as fuck, just looking out, waiting for someone to come. Just someone, anyone, just let me see a light. Someone. I think that's kind of what's going on with us. It's like, yeah, we have each other, but the reality is... We're on some weird round boat that's just bobbing around the universe, and we want someone to come visit us.
Well, there's just people like us that are like, hey, man, most of these people suck. can y'all come down here and fuck with us? Come take us where you're at and teach us your ways.
But a lot of people don't suck, right? I think the real thing is figuring out how to make less people suck.
Yeah.
And figuring out how to way to accept. To accept people for things they've done wrong, too.
I think it's love, man. I think a lot more love. You need that in the world. And there's ways to do it without it being sounding so silly, you know? It's just something that people need to do internally, you know?
Yeah. It seems like an easy thing to say, right? All you need is love.
Yeah. But it's like, you know what? Like, to be hopeful is a good thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's super valuable.
Yeah.
It's everything. If you're not hopeful, you got nothing. You know, I mean, just your attitude determines your success in a lot of your endeavors in life. Your attitude, like your approach that you take to it.
Oh, yeah.
It's whether or not... Sam Harris fucked me up, man. I had this dude, Sam Harris, on the podcast, and he was talking about determinism. And it's the idea that no one has free will, and that basically everything about your personality has been formed by your interactions with your life experiences, your DNA, your genetics, your neighborhood that you grew up in, and that that's just, no matter what you do, inescapable, and that there is no free will. Like, every decision you make is based on all the shit that's happened
before. Your fate is your fate. Yeah.
Well, it's not even that your fate is
your destiny. I mean,
it's sort of been determined by your past experiences and the chemical interactions with those past experiences, and that you're on a path, and that path is like almost undeniable.
Yeah.
Which is it's a weird sort of a semantic argument too. It's because, man, what's going on when you decide to not do coke anymore? What's going on when you decide, you know what, that's it, I'm not smoking anymore? What is going on? Because part of me wants to say, hey, Scott did some powerful shit. He stepped up and he used his willpower and he used his intelligence to realize that he was on a bad path. And that's an admirable thing to talk about, because it inspires people who might be on a bad path themselves to kind of like catch your momentum and, you know, and gives them confidence.
Yeah.
And it gives them confidence hearing you today with your shit together, all cool as fuck, and think about you being, you know, this guy who was doing coke all the time and didn't like it. That's... I feel like there's got to be something there that made you do that. I mean, this idea of pure determinism is really fascinating, and I get it. I totally get it. I wonder how much of personal choice is just what is the force that makes a person decide to do the right thing?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, what we were talking about before. You know, if you kind of start from one place where you know, you got to make your own way. It just kind of makes it a little bit, you know, it just, you savor it a little bit more, and it means more when you get it, you know, because you had to really work and achieve something, you know. But my whole thing is, when I was a kid, I was immediately looked at as someone who wasn't going to amount to shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, it's just like, start from the bottom. That's the bottom. When motherfuckers look at you as a human being and be like, oh, he's not gonna amount to anything.
By the way,
you know that's what teachers, you know that's what your peers, you know that's what certain people in the neighborhood may think of you. You know, because of whatever reason, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Off just you just being in a certain environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you already have that against you.
right? And then you don't want to conform. You don't want to be a statistic, you know? And that's kind of like what my thing was, you know? I just didn't want to be another nigga out here lost and shit.
And do
you know what I'm saying? Like, and that was what I made that choice at that time, you know? And I knew that me making that choice would help other people see that they can make the choice. Because I was also inspired by, you know, some people that were in my space that weren't falling into the other shit. It might have been, like, one of my homies that was, like, you know, in the sports. And, like, you know, got good grades and played sports and wasn't caught up in some shit. And I was like, man, this dude got some goals here. You know, I might not be into sports, but this dude right here has some type of goal because he don't want to turn up like this because we got that option too. Right. You know, so it's like, it was just a lot of things I was able to just, like, and I was the youngest of four. So, you know, I was able to just kind of be young and look at my older siblings and kind of like learn what not to do. And that's kind of why I use that whole, like, I'm your big brother phrase in my music, because I feel like, you know, even with the mistakes I've made, that's what a big brother is supposed to do. Like, I'm supposed to make some mistakes so you can learn, you know, and then those kids will learn and then they'll make their own mistakes and then there'll be a bunch of other kids that'll learn, you know. It's like a system, you know. And I kind of like, you know, I like that I'm that person, you know. I like to take that whole big brother thing to that, you know, to the full extent into the music. But I really believe that I had the odds against me in such a way, and I also just felt like everybody thought I was a loser from day one. I was tired of feeling like that. I was tired of people looking at me in that way, and I wanted to finally find whatever it was that was my own, my calling, to prove that, you know, because I tried everything else.
Do you think that in some ways, like, coming from a troubled background is like almost a gift because it gives you that burning fire? Or do you think it's like a double-edged sword because it gives you that gift, but it also gives you like this hole that sometimes is difficult to keep filled? Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I see what you're saying, but it's hard to say.
Right.
Because everybody's circumstance is different.
Of course.
You know, like, it could be somebody who came from money that still got the same, you know, DNA and teachings that my mom gave me because they just had really good parents, except they came from money. Like, it don't really matter, you know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
And it could still be drugs in the suburbs, and it could still be all these things that one could get caught up with in the suburbs.
For
it's
sure.
Like, you know, anywhere else. So, like, I it's hard to say. You know, I just had, and this is another thing I was talking to somebody about, you know, because, you know, I was raised, when I think of strength, I think of a woman. I was raised by my mom, you
right.
know, and that is something that I, you know, she's someone I always will look up to, how she just sacrificed everything and took care of us, you know, on a teacher's salary. And that, for me, is like, I got that role model, like somebody
right.
who, like, could have just been like, damn, I got four kids, I need to be chasing a man and trying to find some man to come take care of us. It was more like, you know, I got married, it didn't work out. Now I just need to figure it out for my kids. You know, like, I just have that, you know, and I just kind of always looked up to my mom in that way. And you know, I didn't want to be a failure to her. I wanted to, you know, show her that I could be great and be as strong as she was, and you know.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really
yeah.
a beautiful thing to say.
Yeah.
That's a cool story, man. I love that. Yeah, I just feel like there's a certain amount of energy that people get from wanting to prove other folks wrong.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure.
And it can help you in some ways. It can certainly help you. But I think sometimes even like when you're talking about the benefits you had of cocaine, like there was benefits to it. It's like you could say
yeah.
things and do things that you ordinarily wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah.
Well, there's the motivation of like proving people wrong. You know, I'll show you. You know, you said I wasn't gonna be shit. I'll show you. Mm. Like you get to a certain point in time, that could kind of play against you too, right?
Yes, it could backfire because then it becomes it for me. It becomes like an I definitely did my last, not the album I did, my album before last with that. An angry,
I'll show you,
spiteful, like villainous energy,
right?
You know, and I was able to make some really great records, but it was the most aggressive music I had ever made,
right?
And some of it was the most aggressive on a lot of levels, not even in the mean way, but just like, you know, just the music itself. And I benefited the you know, what I set out to do, you know, it all benefited, you know, but it wasn't the normal way I went out about making an album. So it was weird, you know, and it was something that I took a step back with afterwards and then dropped the second album. I'm like, all right, this one's not so, I don't really feel like I'm like going, you know, up against the masses. Like I really have something to prove here. This is more just like about like just being at some type of peace, you know, and just having things sorted out once all the madness is all done. And just kind of just like, now it's just like, right.
Right.
You know, and that's why I did Indica and then I did Satellite Flight, you know, because I feel like Indica was me just figuring out how to produce, you know, and make records. And then Satellite Flight was me having it mastered and finally putting together something that was just like fine tuned, you know, but in a different structure where I have like some instrumentals and then, you know, with, you know, they're kind of like interludes. And then, you know, records that were just completely, you know, formatted in different ways. Maybe not the 3-verse, 2-hook formula. Maybe just one long verse and one outro. And, you know, maybe no hook at all. Maybe no drums for the first minute and 30 seconds. But there's like raps, you know, just experimenting and trying things. You know, now that I had that expertise with creating a record. You know,
did you ever listen to the Brand New Heavies?
I know some records, yeah.
The Brand New Heavies did this rap thing where they're, God, I was trying to remember the name of it. It's along those lines, like very experimental. And this is like back in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
They did like, Kool G Rap did one of them, and it did it like to like some like actual music behind it. Like, it was pretty interesting stuff. But I remember that, and I remember thinking like, man, like, why don't more people do like weird shit with music? Like, how many people are thinking the way you're thinking? Like saying like, okay, how about we just do no drums for like the first minute and a half and then just start rapping and then the drums kick in? Like these kind of things where you're just like coming up with like just a different approach.
Yeah.
A slightly different entry.
I think people are just a little scared that they'll lose the audience's attention, which is a very real fear. I get it. You know, but it also goes back to what I was saying. Like, I've just been blessed with a fan base that, like, you know, is into what I'm doing no matter what, you know. And that's just dope, you know. But the average artist, no, they can't just experiment. And there's that fear where they might not sell records. And then that's bad for business. And this is a business, you know. So, you know, it's understood why most guys don't really do it. You know, I would like to see people do it. I feel like that's not an excuse. I feel like there's a way where people can be a little bit more creative and push the envelope a lot more with the music, where it fits in a way that makes sense and it's true to their art, and their formula. I feel like there's always a way to try something new and be innovative and bring something different to the table.
If anybody wants to check out that Brand New Heavies that I was talking about, it's called Heavy Rhyme Experience. And it was the Brand New Heavies. It was 92, way back in the day when I was living in New York. And my friend, God damn it, trying to remember his name, stand-up comedian, told me about him. He goes, you got to listen to this shit. These guys are doing some weird stuff. They did a duo with Kool G Rap. They did one of them with Gangstar. It was pretty badass. They had a bunch of different collaborations. So, like, jazz singers with, like, rap. Like, serious, like, best of the class back then. Mm-hmm. Hardcore rappers rapping over their rhyme or their music. It was pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But your point about having the fan base that allows you to fuck around and practice and take chances, that is huge, isn't it? Like,
this
ability that... Yeah. You know, they like you as a person as well as like your music. So and they want to see where you go with it.
Yeah,
you're always going to do your best.
Well, they know it comes from a pure place too. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not like
they know I'm just a top 10 single.
It's just, they know I'm just trying to make some cool shit that they can connect with, and that's the extent. Every time it doesn't go beyond that, and the minute it tries to, it just starts to get frustrating. Like, start thinking about a radio record to please somebody at the label, then it gets frustrating. If I start to think about this and that for this, it gets frustrating. If I keep it just based on, like, hey, man, this sounds gnarly, and let's make sure it's not too trippy, and let's make sure it's not too this and not too that, but a effortless combination of everything all at once, you know? And that's really what these past couple years for me have been, like, just mastering that technique as a producer, Mm-hmm. And, you know, really, really just going all out creatively and just trying new things, because I also internally don't feel like I have anything else to prove as a musician, but I have that itch, you know, like I need to create. Like right. I feel like it's like working out for me. Mm-hmm. It's like doing reps and staying mentally fit, creatively fit, you know. So when it comes time to do an album, I've got some new powers I've acquired in the past year, just like, you know, from just dicking around in the studio for a couple months, just going every day making beats. Whether I'm in the studio for 5 hours or 2 hours, I'm making something. I'm making at least, like, on average, I make about, like in the studio, I'm making at least 2 to 4 beats a day. And when I say beats, I'm talking about completed, sequenced instrumentals that I could make records on. So, like, not just some shit I started a little bit and then it's kind of cool and I'll get back to it later. I have probably like a baker's dozen of those in one session. But I'll have like 4 that are officially like, oh, these jams are dope, I'm going to sit and live with these and see what comes up.
So, you know? When you sit down to write music, do you sit down and do you have an idea in your head, or do you just let it come to you while you're there? Like, how do you know how to start?
It comes different every time. It doesn't, it depends. It could be a bass line that I'm thinking of that inspires me, or it could be me not have anything in my mind and just going through the sounds. Or it could be like, you know, a rhythm I heard, or, you know, anything. It could be a movie I'm watching. Right. I like to, you know, produce while I'm watching movies with the sound off. And that kind of helps me with scoring, you know, when I get into scoring and I'm, you know, doing that, that's my next step. You know, I want to get more into scoring movies and sound design. But it's all, for me, it's all just experimentation and just seeing what happens. And you know, it's not any pressure.
And when you hear a beat, like when you're making a beat and you're creating it, are you hearing lyrics? Are you thinking
sometimes.
About, yeah?
Yeah, I'm hearing, I mean, here's... You know, when I'm hearing something, I hear it completed, right? So when I'm starting a record and I feel like I got something, I'm like, all right, this song, I feel like, and it's back to what you were talking about, because, you know, I feel like, you know, time doesn't really exist. So an hour from now is happening right now, right? So there's songs that are created that I haven't made yet. So when I'm in the studio, I feel like I have this small, like, peek into this other world and this window that where I can hear the song, but it's my job in the present to find the pieces to make it so. Mm. And sometimes it might come out exactly like what I'm hearing, and sometimes it might not, but it's never really spot on. You know, I just hear glimmers of what the song completed sounds like until it's completed, and then it's just everything's perfect. But that's how I can sit there and listen to a mix and be like, something's off. Because in my completed version, you know, it's like a coloring book. Every record starts off in one way, just blank, and I'm just filling in all the colors, and then there's one color still missing. You know, that's what's happening in the final, in the ninth inning, you know, when we're mixing the album. I'm like, man, there's still some colors that just not in there yet. And then I'm going through sounds and I find the colors and everything's full and I'm cool. Or I might not find the exact color, but if something close enough, I'm fine. And, like, that's literally where it's at, where you have to make the executive decision, like, all right, I'm done with this. So I'll be sitting for another 2 weeks trying to sit with this mix, because I'm really anal about it. And if I don't just back away and let it be, you know, we'll never hear any music.
That's a fascinating insight into the creation of music. Because I don't know anybody that does that, like, well, where they could tell me about the entire process from the beginning to end. So it's interesting to get a window into that world, because I always wondered, and I also always wondered, like, I know Jay-Z never writes his lyrics down. Yeah. He keeps them all in his head.
Yeah.
Do you do that, or do you actually write them down somewhere?
Nah. Sometimes, I mean, a lot of my hooks are in my head, but I need to write, you know, certain things down to just kind of make sure I'm making sense. I used to do a lot of my earlier stuff just off the dome, just freestyling shit, you know, and sometimes that works good with melodies. I do that a lot. I'll go in there and just hum flows and try different things like that and melodies. But it's really just a combination. It's never just like, you know, always like writing off the dome. Like some ballads I write completely off the dome. You know, I don't need pen and paper for a ballad. But like if it's
something
like
I like that term, off the dome. A great term. I'm going to use that from now on. Whenever there's a joke that I have that's not written down anywhere, it's going to be off the dome.
Yeah, that was, and I feel like that it kind of like, you know, gets people to understand that this is some, you know, the spontaneousness of it, you know.
Is that a term that rappers use all the time, or is that your term, off the dome? Is that yours?
Let's say it's yours.
I like to say it's yours. Okay. I like to say I know the guy came up with that shit. Off the dome. It's a very popular phrase amongst the youngsters now, but it all came out of Kid Cudi.
I'll take it.
Take it.
I'll start spreading that rumor.
So you're essentially open. I mean, whatever, which way ever comes, you just show up. You show up and you put in the work. You put in the work creating the beats. You put in the work coming up with lyrics. Whatever way it comes up, whether it comes up all in your head or whether it comes up writing it down on paper.
And the sessions are really me and my engineer Ian, and occasionally I have like my brother from another mother, Dr. Genius, coming through, who, you know, was in a band that I came up with a couple years ago. That, you know, we kind of just put together because we wanted to try something outside of the world we were already making music in. You know, the sessions are really small. It's not like I got 20 dudes in there.
Right.
They're kind of sad sessions. You know, they're really sad.
Probably not sad at all. Well, I always wonder. I mean, like, one how could peek
in
done.
And feel bad for me, like, oh, he's got nobody in the studio with him. But then, like, you know, like, I'm in there like a mad scientist, like, you know, I'm inventing.
Right.
It's not like, you know, an inventor don't got 20 motherfuckers in his lab while he inventing shit. Niggas is stealing shit. Or they'll, you know, rack focus and, you know, distract him. You know, I find that when you have your friends in the studio, you got, you know, a couple guys on Worldstar, a couple guys on Twitter, a couple guys over here, and everybody's talking about what's going on over here and what's going on here. You're trying to write this song. You get distracted. You're like, what happened? Oh, hell no. That's funny, funny. Next thing you know, it's 2 hours have gone by. You're still working on this record. You had some laughs, but what you came to the studio for is not done yet.
Right.
You know, and there's money being spent. And there's time. Time is of the essence. This is what we hustled and worked hard for. You know, and I had to remind myself. It's like, man, this has turned into a fucking party. Like, we're here for work. So I also have this, like, really gnarly work ethic. Like, because I've been working since I was 15. Like, my first job was Wendy's. I remember why I wanted to work. It was because I wanted my own shit. I was tired of asking my mom for stuff. And also didn't think it was fair, you know, to ask my mom for stuff. Because I know we didn't have much. So, you know, I just had work for me is always, like, one of those things that's very important. Yeah. But like, there was also some jobs that I didn't fucking take seriously, like American Apparel, you know, where I was like coming in late and I didn't give a shit. And then like when my boss fired me, like he took me to like this office and kind of told me, and when he said, he's like, I'm gonna have to let you go, I was like, yeah, I figured that. Yeah.
You knew it.
Because I didn't give a fuck. You know, it was like, now I can go to the studio.
Well, it's probably
now
good
I can,
for
like,
you
work
too.
And like work on my craft, and then maybe find a better paying job. You know, that doesn't have me in the fucking basement of some building. You know, sweating my ass out, folding clothes.
Everybody says you should always do your best at every job you do. Yeah. A champion in life is a champion in everything they do. So if you're gonna mop floors, do your best at mopping floors.
Mop the fuck out of those floors.
That's great on paper, but the reality is, when you're a young man, it's sometimes good to fuck off at something so you know you don't ever want to do that again. They fire you, and then you learn.
Yeah,
and there's some value in that. It's unfortunate, but we don't all learn the best way. You know, sometimes we gotta get fired from American Apparel.
yeah. You know, at least I didn't get fired for like stealing something.
I got fired for being a shitty landscaper. Kept scalping people's lawns.
Yeah, that's fucked up. Now that would fuck somebody's emotions. That would hurt my feelings if that was like the word around town that I've been, you know, my main bread and butter I've been doing, investing my life in, that I was just shitty at.
Yeah.
Hurt my feelings.
Yeah, I wasn't invested in being a landlord boy. Landscaper. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, man. There's a completely different thing when you're creating your own stuff, when you're working for yourself. Then it's like a focus, like an obsession almost type focus, like the laser beam. I love that term, the lab, too. That's one of my favorite terms from the rap world. They love talking about being in the lab, creating material.
Well, you are like an inventor.
Yeah.
You're a scientist, you know, and it's kind of like I treat it in every sense of the word, in every sense of that term, I guess, you know, lab. It's like where I'm working. It's work, and I almost don't like playing around in the studio like that, like, because it is a place for work. It is an office, you know.
Well, especially if you're trying to write things there too as well. You're trying to write lyrics and dudes are all jumping around.
But not even
fun.
That. What if I'm not even just me sitting there? I might not have an idea yet. even if I might just need silence. Yeah.
Right, right, right.
I might just need fucking silence for a little bit.
Yeah, you know? I've never been to any sort of recording studio where anybody was doing anything like serious like that. But I would imagine it's very difficult to avoid the party. It's like, hey, we're in studio and guys come to visit you. Come on by, come to visit.
We did that. So it's like, I did that.
Yeah.
Like now, it's like, I mean, I was, I've been doing
that's like the
doing
music
it professionally
videos.
Since like 22, 23, going to studios and having those moments with the buddies. Because in the beginning, it's like you want your boys around. So I kind of got that out of my system. And now it's like, all right, 30-year-old Scott goes to the studio by himself. He's got his book bag. He's in there for maybe 5-6 hours and then he goes home.
That's smart.
You know what I'm saying? And then
you're
he's like, and this is
way.
A Friday night. You know, and I'm like, in,
good for you.
I'm in bed by like 11, 11:30.
Kapow. Fuck Saturday Night Live. That's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know? No. Hey, man, that's how you get shit done. That is how you get shit done.
I'm just psycho with it, man.
Those music videos, though, when they show the recording studio, it's always a giant table. There's like all those little switches that nobody understands. Maybe you
do. Mixing board.
Everybody's standing in front of all the switches, and then everybody's partying. Everybody's in the background having a good time.
But that could also be when the album's done and they're celebrating it, because that's what also happens. Like, when I'm done with... I finished maybe 8 songs and I feel like I've got the album, like, and I just need maybe a couple more jams. You start inviting people to come hear what you got and get their opinions. So you have those moments too. So you might see that happen, but there's a year and a half of just studio by myself before that happens.
Wow.
You know, like, I don't really, and maybe occasionally I have one or two friends. You know, maybe one of my director friends or my fellow actors who I just kind of want, or who have never really got a chance to be in the studio, come by and just see, get the experience. But they're not in there distracting me. They're just watching and paying attention and want to just be a fly on the wall and see how it works.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are really curious about it because it's almost a, sort of a mysterious type of creativity if people aren't involved in it, especially the creating of music. It's such a cultural... it's such a cultural influence. It's such a powerful influence. Like, music has, it inspires people. Like, when you listen to music at the gym, it can make you work out better. Like, you put your headphones on and you play some awesome songs. You don't give a fuck that you're on some stupid stair machine like a hamster. No. You just keep going.
Yeah.
And the music, you like the music so much, you get into it, and it's in your head, drowning out everything else. Sometimes you don't even realize how heavy you're breathing. Until you take the earplugs out, you're like, holy shit, I'm
fucking getting it in,
working here. It's because of nothing else like hits you like that. Like, people's words, they don't sustain that way. You can't like read an incredibly passionate essay and it sustains you through a workout like that.
Yeah.
No, it's like it needs to be just something that, like, there's nothing like music in that respect. It has an impact that very few things do. So that process of creating it is always fascinating and mysterious to people like me that don't have any musical talent at all.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, see it.
I just approach it in a different way because I do feel like I'm just, every time I'm in the studio, it's just like me just, you know, trying to create the uncreated. And it's a very private thing sometimes. You know, I want to be able to, you know, have my privacy when I do that.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I totally. Do you all your writing and everything in the studio, or do you sometimes sit at home?
Oh, it comes whenever, man.
Right.
I'll be in the shower.
Do you have
I'll be
one
in the shower
those,
thinking of some shit, you know?
Do you ever use that note app on the phone, on your phone, where you talk into it?
I record memos, a lot of the time.
No, not even that. I mean, the note app, you know, you can talk to it. And a voice recognition.
No. I just kind of... See, if I'm recording something, it's a melody.
Okay.
I'm thinking of something, it's a melody. I'm not like thinking of raps like earlier days. It's less about that now, and it's more about like just melodies and coming up with songs and structures.
So you want to hear the sound.
And then the lyrics come next because the music is just going to tell me what to say.
Wow. That's fucking wild. That's so cool. Now, how much of your creation is done under the influence of marijuana?
Man, I don't smoke to create. I've come up with a lot of shit sober sometimes when I'm fresh waking up in the morning.
Like, sometimes
I have the most ideas at like 8 a.m. sometimes.
A lot of people say that, man. Yeah. A lot of writers, like Stephen King, I believe, does all of his writing in the morning. I think he does it 9 to noon every day.
Yeah, it's like, man, I'm fresh in the morning with something. It's a melody. And it usually comes just walking through the house, making breakfast, and, you know, It could be whenever, dropping a deuce, you know.
Right.
I come up with just melodies here and there, and I record them all if something really catches me. Because if I don't record them immediately, then I lose them. So I got to record them somehow. But it's very I'm always thinking about music. As much as like I like to deny it and, you know, go shoot a movie and shit, and, you know, I always think about music. I'm obsessed with the idea of just making, you know, the most beautiful songs that, like, you know, really make people feel some type of comfort or some type of understanding, because the world is so fucked. And, you know, I just really am obsessed with that idea. I think I'm always going to be. And now I'm just trying different ways of doing that. You know, we did the rap shit. We did the rock album. Now I'm just trying to be this, like, weird instrumentalist, you know, and I don't really know what that's going to be. But I'm just really, I guess, in the process, learning how to produce better, too, which is something that, you know, I've been trying to, you know, I always want to be better. So it's good to, you know, be learning and getting better as I'm creating.
Do you do any other things, like, other than music? Do you have any other hobbies or any things that, like, you also get locked into?
I like designing sometimes. Like, you know, I wouldn't look at myself as, like, a fashion designer, but, you know, if an opportunity comes around, I'll do a collab or two.
You like designing clothes? Like, what kind of clothes?
Yeah, like, I've done about 5 t-shirt collaborations with Bathing Ape.
Oh, okay.
I used to work there. That was my last job before I got famous, you know, so... Like, I have, you know, roots back in New York, and that was pretty much one of those, the only job I really kept in touch with, and, you know, that I went back to and you know, did some things for the fans.
So you just into creating shit.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, it really, for me, I'm starting to write a little bit more. It's just staying creative.
Right, like a book or like blog entries? Like, what do you mean?
Like TV shows, horror movies, ideas I've had in my head for a while. I'll just start jotting them down, and, you know, just everything right now is just me just expressing whatever comes to mind, you know, anything that creatively strikes me.
Yeah, see, that's a dream job for people, to be able to just come up with things all the time. Just work on creating. Your entire day spent mostly just concentrating on creating.
I'm not doing anything with those things yet, but it's stimulating, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I'm going to have some TV show tomorrow or anything. It's just, for me, it just is stimulating, you know? And shit, knowing me, I'll fuck around and might write the next shit, you know? Like,
right,
you know?
Right.
Or who knows?
Write something that
that's something I can sell, or something that could lead me to something else. Yeah, who knows? But...
and it probably also helps your creativity in the other areas as well, right?
But then on top of that, I was the king of being like, oh, I have this idea, but nah, that's not for me. Or no, I couldn't do that. Music is my thing. No, I couldn't do that. So now I'm like past that. Now there's nothing. If it pops into my mind, then I can fucking do it, because I thought about it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's just about finding time for certain projects, and I'm not in no rush, you know.
You're not worried about being pigeonholed, you're saying?
No, I think I've done enough strong arming and let me get, you know, my space as an artist where I can kind of do whatever I want now at this point.
So you reached out to me
on
Twitter.
But it still has to be good, though. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm always feeling like I'm vulnerable to make some bullshit. You know, like, I don't feel like good. I'm invincible. Like, and I think a lot of artists do get to that point where they feel invincible. Like, I am very capable of making some weak shit. It's just y'all motherfuckers don't hear it, you know? And that's because I'm sitting there making sure that it's not weak shit. Scrapping the ones that are and working on the ones that started off weak, but, you know, making sure that they were where they needed to be before you heard it.
Are they like, you got to know when to abandon them?
Oh, yeah. I know when to abandon some shit immediately. It's certain feelings you get. You know when some shit is the right one and when it's not.
There's jokes like that, too. It's very similar.
Yeah.
It's very similar. Some of them you just got to let go.
Yeah, and you can't... And for songs, it's much more emotional to let go of some shit that you like, because it might be on the right track to being something gnarly. Like,
do you put it on a shelf, maybe? Like, say,
you always
revisit it?
Yeah, I go back every year. I go back and listen to the shit that I made the year before.
How do you categorize them? Do you make notes, or do you just
know?
Nah,
they're all numbered. You just number it.
So you go back and you go, okay, this is from 2013. Let me just listen to what I was doing.
Yeah, my engineer, I'll just tell him, pull up everything. We'll just listen to things one by one. Flag the ones that are good and or the ones that, because that's the thing. You always got to give yourself a break. And it's always good to listen to stuff with fresh ears,
mm-hmm.
I find. Yeah. And also to just give your brain a break, because for me, I'm sitting in the studio for hours listening to the same old shit, like the same old beat, you know, that you're working on, you know? So it's kind of like you need to back off a second. Like, I like to, you know, work on a record, bounce them, whatever, you know, bounce them means kind of compressing all those sounds to one track to make that MP3.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you know, that's what you bounce down a file. That's what you guys get on your iPods. Is a bounce down file of all the files. So I'll bounce down everything. The ones that I feel like were close to being finished or reasonable enough for me to listen to and write to. And I won't listen to them that night. I'll wake up the next day, and while I'm making breakfast, I might listen to them then with fresh ears. And I'll be like, oh, shit. Most of the time, it's like, oh, this is dope. And because the night before, I'm just like, oh, this shit sucks. I don't know. I'll listen to it tomorrow. You know, because I've been in the studio for hours.
You're too close.
Yeah, I'm by myself, and yeah. I don't have nobody to tell me, like, yo, that shit is fresh. It's just like me and my own expertise. I'm just like, right now, I think this is all shit. But I'll bounce it down, and I'll listen to it tomorrow and see how I feel. And almost every time I do that, if I bounce it down, it's like, dope. And a lot of this shit could be for someone else and not for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you that it's a thing about music too. It seems like when there's a song that I really like, any genre, it's like I really like it. I like it at first, and then I start really liking it when I keep hearing it. I hear it a bunch of times,
yeah.
And then as I'll hear it like the fourth or fifth time, that's when I'll really get into it.
Yeah,
and it's interesting how music does that. Like there's songs that you need to hear a bunch of times. That's why people don't like new shit. Like, if the Rolling Stones go on tour, like, they better play those fucking classics.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear some weird shit you've been writing, Keith.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That's what I learned. I learned the hard way. You know, you go out and you do Coachella, and it's like, all right, I got fucking Coachella to do. Let's come with the hits. Let's give them the joints they want to hear. You know, I'm not going to go out into Coachella and be like, all right, guys, so I know you guys know these songs as they are produced on the album, but we're doing them all acoustic tonight. And I'm doing them all in different keys, so they won't even be formatted how you remember them. But I promise you, you have me tonight on this stage for at least an hour and a half. Maestro. It's just the worst show ever, you know?
Yeah, when you go and do a new show, like if it's a totally new thing, do you do a smaller clubs? Do you fuck around with like rock clubs?
Nah, what are you talking about? Like,
if you're going to work, like the first time you're going to do a live perform, like any of your new stuff.
New material.
Yeah.
Tour. Because the tour is like, for me, it's the fan club. You know, I could go up there and fumble as many times I want all night, and my fans are just like, it's all good. This is the clubhouse.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is where you're supposed to fuck up. You know, when you go and do Coachella, there's no time.
Right.
There's no time to fuck up. Everybody's watching. It's like the clubhouse is where you dick around. It's like, you know, when a comic goes to like the club he used to do stand up at before he blew up, because he knows those are his people and he could be himself there and he can try new jokes.
Right.
You know, that's the same deal. Like, that's how I approach tour. You know, I don't let press in unless they buy a ticket. You want to come to my show, then fucking buy a ticket. Because most of the time you give the press their ticket and they're writing and talking shit. So it's like you're giving motherfuckers a free pass to come see your show so they can talk shit. It's like, no, asshole, you want to talk shit about my show, you're going to have to pay for it.
Well, people like, feel like they can't get any attention unless they talk shit. That's a big issue with folks.
But it's like, you know, whatever the case may be, I'm going to make you work hard to get in there to talk shit, because it is a fucking membership. It's like the only people I want in my concert are people that really give a shit about what we're doing as artists, you know, and you know, understand me as a human being, you know. So let's say
this is a very psychedelic point of view.
Yeah, I mean, because it is, at the end of the day, like we were talking about before, it's all an experience, you know, and the show is even more so because it's bringing the songs to life. Like, I'm there, it's like a play. For
right,
me,
right,
it's
right.
Theater. Like, I'm out there. I'm the showman for tonight, and I'm taking you to a place. It's kind of like, leave your worries behind.
It's like Fantasy Island. There.
Yeah, it's like I don't really want kids to, you know, the average hip hop show. It's like you see your favorite artists come out at best, perform the hits. They're almost there, but you can't touch them. But it's just dope to know that you're in the same building with them. And then that's the end of it. And that's just what you take. It's like, man, we were in the nosebleeds, but it was really nice. We was, you know, there tonight with that, my favorite rapper or whatever. This shit with me, it's more therapy. I'm confessing some things through song. You're seeing me, you know, confess these things. You see the emotion as I'm performing, you know. And then there's kids out there that are connecting with it in such a way where it's like, man, I already connect with this dude, but he's performing it in such a way where he means it even more. He's singing it in a way where he means it even more in this environment. You know, it's like, it's a different experience. And I love giving people that experience. You know, I love connecting with them in a way where, you know, everybody at that concert is paying attention and they're there because they want to experience something.
Right. You reached out to me about people asking questions about psychedelics.
Yeah.
You fielding questions about psychedelics.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the motivation behind that?
I saw a tweet from a young man. He hit me up, and he just simply asked me, how much he should take of some shrooms. And I don't know. I just saw it. And I was like, oh, okay. And I gave him a response, and I didn't think nothing of it. But then I saw a lot of people responding, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And other people were asking me questions. And then I was like, holy shit, this could be bad. Like, this could be really bad. But then it's like, you know what? The I am your big brother shit. Like, if they're going to do drugs and they want to know about it, at least ask me. Come to me. You know, I'll give you the real shit. You know, if you want them to ask somebody, ask me. And that's kind of how I looked at it. And it ended up being this thing. But then I know that you talk about psychedelics and you have specifically talked about DMT because I answered a question about DMT. And that's why I was like, man, we should talk about this with Joe. You know, because I know that I mean, I can't sit down with just anybody and talk about DMT. Even some of my friends, I've told them that I've done it, and they've like looked at me in a way where it's like, you know, it's like, whoa, you did DMT.
It's a game changer.
Yeah, yeah. But that lets me know that there's people that don't understand it and they're not educated about it, and so they just kind of hear these stories. And
yeah,
so that's also why I was like, man, it would be dope to if we just sat down and talked about it and educate some people, because I just know it's, I mean, even some people are scared of acid. It's a scary thing. You know, I tell people, I remember, this is a true story. This is kind of like one of those things where, you know, I'm not throwing this kid under the bus, but you know, this is a reality. I was at Coachella. We were backstage. I ran into Wiz Khalifa, and I see him, you know, often, and he was, you know, telling me he was doing shrooms or whatever and experimenting with shrooms, and I was like, oh man, you should do acid. And he was just like, no. And I was like, oh man, well, you know, shrooms is like the training wheels of fucking psychedelics and shit, you know. And it's like, he's like, oh man, I'm not fucking with that though. You can just tell that it was just maybe something. He might have known somebody had a bad trip, or he heard some bad things, but like there was like fear. And I was just like, oh, it's like, man, it's just people are kind of like taken back when you say you do acid sometimes. And even when I talk about it on Twitter, people be like, whoa, chill, you want some other shit. And it's like, man, like, I mean,
well, that's the one where people really talk about going crazy.
Yeah, but I don't. You can go crazy drinking too much.
Yeah.
So I don't really.
You never had a bad trip?
On acid, yeah, but it wasn't because of me. It was because I let some other motherfucker come in the situation that wasn't ready with his shit. You know how some people come in and try to act like they do this and don't do this. And, you know, you have situations like that.
But and I've so never, he bad tripped and you got dragged along.
Yeah, because you gotta make sure everybody's cool and you want to, you know, help people out. You don't want to leave nobody abandoned. And I feel like that's the big thing with psychedelics is if you're doing it with people, no matter if you know them well or not, you don't want to really leave nobody hanging, you know, and you want to.
Right.
You want to try to find a common ground because everybody tripping, you know, and it's like, you know, everybody at the end of the day, we tripping, and it's scary because somebody used to be like, 1 minute, you was trying to kill me. What? No, it's not what you think. You know, and it's just
right,
be bad.
Right.
I've never had no shit like that. And I'm pretty sure people have dealt with that, though. You know,
definitely. You know, well, that's the thing about acid is always the horror stories. Like we were talking about Pink Floyd. Yeah. Like the dude from Pink Floyd, which one of those guys went fucking crazy from acid? What the fuck's his name? Jeremy, you don't know? Yeah, one of the dudes from Pink Floyd went fucking crazy. That's what Shine On You Crazy Diamond was about him. That song was about him going fucking crazy from doing too much acid. Hold on, Shine On You Crazy Diamond.
I know part of the information. I don't want to quote like I know it all.
Yeah, in Wikipedia.
Dave's the man.
Yeah. It was written, okay. Shine On You Crazy Diamond is a nine-part Pink Floyd composition written by Roger Waters, Richard Wright, and David Gilmour, and it's a tribute to former band member Syd Barrett. Syd Barrett was the one who went bananas,
yeah,
allegedly.
But that album cover too is just so fucking sick too. He's shaking his hand, dude's on fire.
Yeah.
So
man.
Fucking gnarly.
For real. Yeah. He apparently, I don't know if that's true, the whole LSD thing, but through the, it says, this is the Wikipedia, it says throughout late 1960, for Barrett, for Syd Barrett, throughout late 1967 and the early 1968, Barrett's behavior became increasingly erratic and unpredictable, partly as a consequence of his reported heavy use of psychedelic drugs, most prominently LSD. Many reports described him on stage strumming one chord through the entire concert or not playing at all. At a show at the Fillmore in San Francisco during a performance of Interstellar Overdrive, Barrett slowly detuned his guitar. The audience seemed to enjoy such antics, unaware of the rest of the band's consternation. Interviewed on the Pat Boone Show during the tour, Syd's reply to Boone's question was blank and totally mute stare, according to Nick Mason. Syd wasn't into moving his lips that day, so he was just going.
He's my hero.
He went out there for whatever reason. I mean,
he's my hero.
Yeah, he might have lost his shit. Who knows? Or he might have just got tired.
Fuck this, probably.
Yeah, probably on acid all the time and just couldn't realize he was quitting Pink Floyd for acid.
He met that new girl, and she was just still. He was still in that old relationship.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about cigarettes earlier, and in a world where cigarettes are legal and they kill 500,000 people in this country alone every year, it's preposterous to think that we're too much of a group of fucking babies to deal with psychedelics. We need like centers. We need centers. We have educated people with, you know, like degrees who understand the human body, doctors who can administrate it, people can take care of people and have them in these really comfortable environments where people go and they have the possibility in a professional setting of experiencing these things. And that should be a part of normal human culture because you've benefited from it. I benefited from it. Brian has kind of benefited from it. It's debatable as he holds up his cigarettes. Camels. He smokes camels.
Camelette.
Silly bitch. Blue. So silly. Do you think you get hypnotized?
I don't think I can get hypnotized now.
Too smart?
Yeah, I think I would just think about it the whole time, overthink about it. All right, this guy's trying to hypnotize me right now. I can hear his voice. All right. I don't know.
I think you could do it, bro.
They say ayahuasca is one of the best ways to quit. Ayahuasca is supposed to be like a really good way to quit smoking. Quit anything if you want to.
Because you wake up and like, I'm alive, thank God.
But you go through it. You go through the journey, and it's just so self-examinatory. Even the regular DMT trips I've had, they're intensely self-examinatory.
Yeah.
Like the insight that you have into your own life and your own world, your own mind, it's scary. Because it's awesome. It's so clear. The clarity is so bizarre.
Yeah, it freaked me out, man. I'm I'm not gonna lie, and I've done my fair share of acid. You know, I'm big on psychedelics and
DMT, some next level
and,
shit.
Yeah, but I've had nothing like this, and you try to explain it and you can't because there's nothing you could. There's no, you can't find the words to explain sometimes what you see. You know, and you're a little bit more educated about it than I am. You could probably find the words. You know. Like, sometimes you fucking talk like a scientist and shit. I'm like, following, like, but you know.
It's bullshitting, trust me.
But, you know, at the same time, like, for people that might not be educated, it's still hard for me to, you know, put in the words what I saw. But, you know, the reality is what you're seeing is everything literally melt down and deconstruct and reconstruct around you. And your eyes are wide open. And it literally, for me, that was the only thing that freaked me out. The fact that my eyes weren't closed, but my environment was completely altered immediately, almost before I could even exhale all the smoke, before I was even leaning back on my couch. I mean, the room rearranged itself and became something else. And I felt happy.
Graham Hancock has a very fascinating way of looking at it. And what he thinks... The way he described it to me, I never heard anybody describe it this way before, but it made total sense. He said, everyone says, you're taking drugs and it's distorting your perception of reality, and that's what you're saying. He goes, that is a possibility. Another possibility is that, like a telescope, needs to be tuned in to see a far-off star, that what you're doing by taking this chemical that your brain already makes,
yeah,
you're tuning in to something that's ordinarily impossible for you to see, and that there is this dimension that is around you all the time,
all
and
the
it
time.
Is filled with intelligent entities. And he said, we must consider that that is also a possibility. And that is a fascinating way of looking at it. Because we really don't know what's happening, and the people that aren't blown away by it are just the people who haven't done it.
Yeah.
If you've done it and you're not blown away by it, I don't understand you.
Yeah.
There's also supposedly some people who don't have a reaction to DMT. There's a small percentage of people that try it where nothing happens.
I went two separate occasions where first time it didn't work for me. And then the second time it did.
Was the first time bad stuff, or did you not?
I think the first time we didn't administer it right, and then the second time it was done right. You know,
the second time it was.
Second time was like, because also I hit it extra hard because I was like, there ain't no mistake, it's gonna work this time. So I had this really like, man,
you know what?
Shit was crazy.
My story is the same as yours, almost. It's slightly different in that I did it. The first time I did it, it was pretty fucking profound. Intensely profound. And I thought I'd hit the center of the universe. And then the second time I did it, I blew way past that spot to some complete new place where there was no avoiding it and no denying it. And I went, oh, this is it. And then that's the spot I've been kind of going to pretty much every time since then.
Yeah.
But the first time was unbelievably profound, way more profound than anything else. And I didn't really even get all the way through.
Right. I haven't been through yet. Like that world that you're talking about. Like, I haven't went there. Like, I couldn't even get out of whatever was happening in that room in my house because it was, I don't know if I was.
Did you keep your eyes open?
I for the most part, my eyes were wide open because I was so intrigued that, like.
Yeah.
I was just like,
you're seeing a bunch of shit around you.
Yeah, but then when I closed my eyes and I got over that, then that was a whole other experience. And that was this tunnel-like thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was dark. It was more some evil shit happening there. It didn't freak me out too much. But, you know, because I know, like, that's another thing, people. Like, as long as if you see some shit that might freak you out, just remember you are on drugs. You know, like,
sort of.
Some shit, you know.
Or you're like, seeing demons for real.
Yeah, but they can't harm you. You know, just sit your ass still. Don't fucking move. And, you know, you'll come back.
Hopefully.
But this was more just like, just some weird shit happened, and I didn't go down that rabbit hole too far. I was just kind of opened my eyes back open, and just kind of still shit was weird. But I kid you not, Joe, as soon as I was kind of like, oh, all right, I'm over this, then I came back. And then it was kind of like what I could describe as like an overlapping a little bit of that world and reality, still a little haze of it, where there was shades of the other world. It's almost like I saw a face in the corner of my room just kind of dip back off into the walls.
Yeah.
I saw like these kind of like spidery things kind of coming out my Grammy and onto the ground. But that's the thing, though. At this point, my room was back to it being a room.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I was back to reality, but it was like this. This, you know, the world was still, was like the echo from where I was at was still kind of in the room, you know, and it hadn't worn off yet completely.
Yeah, well, next time you do it, don't do it that way. Next time you do it, just keep your eyes closed and let it go away.
So don't keep my eyes open.
No, I don't think so.
Dude.
I think the keeping the eyes open part is probably fucking with you.
Oh, man, I was.
Yeah, they say the best way to do it is in a really comfortable place.
I mean, I loved it, though. It wasn't that
still
scary.
It was positive.
I didn't go to that world that you said you were going to because my eyes were open. Mm. It was really just, I was just so intrigued. I wanted to paint.
Must have been crazy.
When I got done, I wanted to paint everything I saw because I just had never seen it like that. And I never want to paint, dude.
Have you ever seen Alex Gray's paintings?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. But I don't know if my shit was going to be like that. Because I didn't go to that world.
Right. Well, whatever you went to would be different than this world.
It was, but like, you know how you were saying, like, or some of those paintings are just like some guy and there's like all this energy around it and it's all these colors. I didn't see that. I didn't get there yet. You know?
Probably, yeah. Well, most people don't get enough. you know, like just, but like I said, my first experience, I thought it was pretty fucking amazing, and it still wasn't nothing like the second one. The second one, I was like, oh, I get it. Yeah. Boy, I was ridiculous. I thought I was already there because what I had seen was still so much different than reality. I was like, wow, this is the craziest thing ever. But it was not even close to the actual craziest thing
so
ever.
So you close your eyes every time?
Yeah, yeah.
I never keep your eyes open.
I have opened my eyes before.
And what happens?
Just you see patterns everywhere. It's like it's you too much. I think there's a conflict of information. There's the information you're getting from your eyeballs.
It's two different trips.
Yeah, and then there's what's going on in your imagination or your mind, whatever the imagination is. Not even to imply that it's not real or it's not a real experience. The imagination has a lot of like negative connotations to it. But whatever it's going on, when you got your eyes closed, you're not. There's no physical objects in front of you. You're seeing all this stuff happening in your visual field with your eyes closed. But you're not. You know, there's nothing you reach out and grab. So that's why I'm saying imagination. But whatever you're doing when you're doing that is real. Yeah. I don't know what it is. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck is happening.
Yeah.
But it's real.
Yeah.
Dude, we're out of time.
Oh man,
it's over. We did 3 hours.
Just awesome.
Flew by. Thank you, man.
This is awesome.
Really
man.
Appreciate it. And
yeah.
I think it was cool for people to get a unique insight into your creative process. And that was really powerful. All the shit that you shared about your personal life and the coke and everything. That was amazing, man.
Thank you, man.
Thank you very much.
Hell yeah, anytime.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's the end, you dirty fucks. So we will see you very soon. Many more podcasts this week. And until then, go fuck yourselves.
I love you guys.
Much love to everybody. Big kiss. Mwah, 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 mwah.
That was awesome. We definitely...